Should we just get it out of the way immediately?
Yeah.
We should, right?
That's what everybody's talking about.
I guess
today,
so. Last night was the first presidential debate between your Donald Trump and your Hillary Clinton. And depending on who you ask or who you see or who you hear, one of them won the debate. But we don't know who, because I've heard both sides of it.
I think it's been pretty...
Hillary won.
More people are saying Hillary Clinton, however...
I don't know if it'll translate into the polls.
You're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Steve. But immediately, like within seconds of the debate ending, I think more people were saying that it was Hillary Clinton's night. Trump had his moments, but it didn't... I don't think it did what he was hoping it would do.
I'd be interested to see how the audience dropped off toward the end, you know? I mean, if there were 100 million people watching, I would imagine they were tuning in at the beginning. There probably weren't that many at the end.
I was not at the end because my cable went out.
Okay, well, he had a very strong beginning and a very weak end. So if the people, you know, if the biggest number of people were watching only the first 20 minutes, he probably did better than people who watched the entire thing.
It started out very sedate, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought they brought in the Trump double.
Right, the quiet Trump. He was,
and he wasn't as orange.
He was less orange. He was very cordial at the very beginning.
Absolutely.
Smiles and a handshake, as you would expect.
Yeah, and I thought, wow, this is where he can turn on the presidential. Let's see it.
You know, it's so funny because I have to imagine he sits with his advisors and they figure that out to the smallest degree. Wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you think that they would say, it's probably in our best interest to make you look as presidential as we possibly can at this point?
But he can't hold it together that long. Then he comes out.
Agreed. But then don't you also think Hillary Clinton's people say, what can we do to bring out Monster Trump? What can we do to rile him? Because those moments existed all throughout.
Yeah.
And kept getting, like, as Steve said, as the night went on, you saw more of that, the unbridled Trump.
It was like the John Belushi character where, you know, at Weekend Update where it gets more and more excited.
Yes.
Right.
But I kept waiting, and I was texting back and forth with a buddy where, you know, he kept interrupting her, and I think they counted it was 51 or 52 times. And I kept waiting for her to wait for the exact right moment to turn and say, Mr. Trump, will you please, you know, show some respect?
Yeah.
And it occurred to me about two-thirds of the way through, her strategy was not to.
Let him do it.
Let him look as if he's being an interrupter and all of that, I guess. I mean, it seemed to work.
I think it worked. I was watching it with my husband and with my 13-year-old son, Dylan, and he's like, why is he not stopping when he's told to stop? I go, that's how he rolls, Dylan. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, he's not playing by the rules. I said, bingo.
That's what you get. Here's something that occurred to me, and I've thought this about Donald Trump for quite a while, but it certainly showed itself last night. When he's not talking, when he's just in listening mode, if you look at his mouth, it starts on the low side, it arches up, and it ends on the low side on the other side of his face. You almost have to try to scowl. Like, a scowl just isn't a natural
move
for your face. You have to train your muscles to look that displeased. But that was his look through 80% of the night last night. He just looked displeased.
That was an uncomfortable setup, I think, with the split screen for the whole debate.
Why do you say that, Steve?
I don't know. I just felt like... I felt like they were both in my face the whole time or something, and they were she was a little lower than him because she's a little shorter. I don't know. It's nice to
see their reactions, though.
It is, but it didn't give either of them a moment break. You know, they were on completely every second of the debate, which is hard.
Someone said on an MSNBC last night after the debate, I was switching around afterwards, and on MSNBC, somebody said that she seemed to get the fact that she would be on camera 100% of the time because her reactions were kind of staid and solid, and she reacted accordingly. And no coughing. His reactions, well, you saw, they ran the gamut from strange faces.
He's pretty entertaining to watch, I'll tell you.
I know he is. He is. He's very entertaining to watch. But, like, she got it. The camera's going to be on me. I have to react. Yeah, and he didn't always.
And she was careful with her tone, because a lot of times she sounds very scolding. What struck me as odd at the very beginning when they came out, the pantsuit.
Yeah.
But that's red.
We're not going to judge a lady by what she wears, are we?
No, But my question is, isn't red usually the Republican color? And he had a blue tie on.
You're right.
Yeah.
They flip-flopped.
The red state, blue state.
Yeah, I'm serious. That's...
I think in a case like that, first of all, your options are incredibly limited fashion-wise on both sides. A guy is going to wear a very conservative-looking suit regardless. You can't be very flashy in that situation if you're a guy, can you? You can't
no,
just come
you
out
can
wearing...
do a crazy tie if you wanted to, but then...
But then people go, he was doing fine until he pulled out the crazy tie.
True.
Who's going to vote for a guy with a crazy tie? And her options are probably just as limited, and she has been the patron saint of the pantsuit for
years.
I'm
okay, but there are better-looking pantsuits, and I would have gone more businesslike.
Yeah.
Like a dark color.
I'm scheduled to bring her to J. Jill over the weekend. If you want to come with us, you can come with us. Do you want in?
I thought she handled herself fantastically. And something I did notice that kind of bugged me is she did have this little smirk on her face.
Yeah.
That started bugging me after a while. But it's kind of like that's her way of biting her tongue. And it just seemed like he would say something and she'd have that smirk like, I got this. I'm ready to come back.
Right.
And with his sniffing, I have a theory about all his sniffing. He didn't sniff a lot when he was talking about business. When he was talking about policies, that's when he would go. And to me, it was like, is that an indication that he is stalling for time, or is it an indication that a lot of times people will, and I've noticed this over the years, if you're at a party and somebody says something where they feel like they've nailed it, they kind
of
lean back and go like
that,
kind
of
like the rubbing your stomach, like I got it. It was when he was unfamiliar with his answers, that's when I noticed him sniffing. When he was talking business, you didn't hear it at all.
Well, he talks now to Fox News mostly only pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was on this morning and he was complaining that he had it. And he did this, I think he went into the spin room, which is very unusual last night. And he said his microphone wasn't working well.
In the room. On
TV it was fine, but I think from some people who were in the room, said it did crackle a couple of times. I don't know. And he sort of, you know, he said, I don't want to believe in a conspiracy theory, but, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't want to say it.
People are saying.
But more people were watching on TV than in the room.
Well, no one in the room counted because they were all invited by one or the other. But what I wanted to say was this morning he was asked about the sniffling, apparently. And he blamed that on the microphone. I'm not sure.
Oh, please.
I'm not sure.
As if microphone made it sound like he was sniffing.
No,
maybe.
He was sniffing.
But that's what I'm thinking, Bill. Maybe that's what he was implying.
Because I've never heard him, in all the years I've heard him speak, I've never heard that be. I just assumed you caught him during a cold, which is fine. You can't control
well,
that.
Then I'm surprised, you know, Mr. No Filter wouldn't say, pardon the sniffles, I've got a little bit of a cold. Not pneumonia, but a cold.
Because of Obama. He would blame the cold on Obama.
So Hillary Clinton was asked about the microphone this morning, and she said, a candidate who blames his microphone knows he had a bad night.
There's a lot of truth to that, guys. Should we take a quick break and then head to the listeners?
A lot of people want to check in. We'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. What did you think of last night? Was there a clear-cut winner? Highlights, lowlights? You tell us. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
According to CNN, Hillary Clinton was deemed the winner of Monday night's debate by 62% of voters who tuned in to watch, while just 27% said they thought Donald Trump had the better night. That's according to a CNN ORC poll of voters who watched the debate.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to talk about some of the sniffling and... I think someone hung up, but let's talk about microphones. Trump allegedly blamed the microphone was not working correctly in the venue, fine on television, but he did not say he was sniffing. He said it was microphone issues.
Yeah.
Kerry?
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, first of all, I'm not a Trump supporter or defender, but I actually had to listen to the debate last night because I was driving home from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I listened to it after... it was on a station down the dial after a baseball game, but I was too late, so I listened to it. And I noticed when he was speaking, some of the stuff, I didn't really notice the sniffling, but there was some weird stuff going on. Like, he did drop in and out a couple times, and he mentioned that. And it didn't happen to Hillary. Now, I didn't hear the sniffling, but and the levels sometimes, I did hear that, at least on the radio feed I was listening to. So there may be a tiny bit of truth to that? Because at least on the radio, I can't speak for TV because I didn't see it.
It sounded fine on the television. And as for his sniffing, in my opinion, you could see his nostrils going in and out. So it's not like you could blame it on the microphone.
Yeah, like I said, I couldn't see it. But there was, like, especially towards the end, there were times when he dropped out a couple times and I missed a little. Yeah, at least on this, like I said, could have been the feed from the station, could have been a lot of things. But I did hear that. The sniffling I didn't really pick up, but a couple times it sounded like the levels were a little weird. So, and again, I'm not a Trump supporter, so it's just the fact that I heard last night, at least on the radio feed I listened to.
I wonder if in a situation like that, if you're him and you realize that, you know, I'm sure he considered that to be a disadvantage, don't you say out loud, is there some way I'm getting... my microphone isn't quite doing what we need it to do. Can we get this fixed?
Remember last time he said he wasn't going to pay the guy.
The guy fired.
Yeah.
He was going to pay him.
Because it was a faulty microphone.
I thought about that, too, because he immediately said there's something wrong. But if he knew, why didn't he say something? Unless somebody afterwards, one of his people came and said,
maybe
your microphone was goofy. But, I don't know. But like I said, I did, again, it could have been just the feed I was listening to in my car, but he did drop in and out a couple times where it made me hard to hear his complete sentence.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Kerry. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Sorry. Hung up on him.
His mic dropped out.
Hi, Joe.
How you doing? Listen, first off, the person that won the debate last night, in my opinion, I think it was the people that didn't tune in.
Why do you say that? Why?
It doesn't. Come on. I mean, their words really don't mean anything. I mean, people, they've already made up their minds. Most people have already made up their minds. It's probably 0.1% of America that really is actually on the fence. So, you know, their words really mean nothing. That's just my opinion, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the other thing is about the sniffling, because I didn't listen to it, so I don't know when the sniffling occurred. However...
Throughout, by the way, start to finish on the sniffling.
Pardon me?
It was kind of the whole 90 minutes. There was an ongoing sniffle on his
side. Although I'm telling you, I noticed it less when he was talking about the business sense of things, because he's very familiar with that.
I was glued to it. I didn't notice the mic dropping out, and I didn't pick up on annoying sniffling at all.
No.
Are you kidding? Really?
No, really. It never registered with me at all.
Huh.
All right, Joe. Did you have something else?
Yeah, the sniffling, there's a thing that's called a self-important sniff. And I've noticed it with people that I work with, a couple of people that I work with, that they do that after they make some sort of a statement or a declarative statement. They'll just do this big inhale, almost like they're puffing out their chest or like that was the best idea. Or it's an exclamation point at the end of what they've just said.
I said that earlier, like kind of a guy rubbing their stomach, like, take that, like, uh-huh. I mentioned that because that's what it seemed like.
Exactly. I had to look it up. I Googled it, and sure enough, that's the very first thing that came up was a self-important sniff.
Steve, you were going to say...
So that's why I said I don't know where the sniff came in, if it was at the end of a statement or if it was in the middle of it. You know, that would make a difference right there. So I don't know if that's what he was doing, but... You know, it's something else to look at and to think about where those sniffs came in at.
All right.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe. Steve, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, as a guy who thinks that too much was made of Hillary Clinton's illness, I'm a little discouraged.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's
like the Zapruder sniff here.
Right, I mean, listening to it in all directions.
Yeah.
It really, he's got a bunch of tics. Donald Trump has a bunch of very easy to discern tics, and that self-important sniff isn't one of them. In all the years I've heard him speak, I've never heard that. Let's be honest, he probably just has a little bit of a cold, so I don't know if you hold that against the guy. There's plenty to hold against him. I don't know if he has a little sniffle, if you can hold that against him.
No, I'm not holding it against him. I couldn't stop focusing on it. Once it's like he did it a couple times, and it was very noticeable to me, and then it's like I couldn't stop watching it.
Right. Let's go, it's hard, we don't have a whole lot of time here. There was a time where they were talking about his taxes and his failure to release his tax returns, and he was very proud of the fact, you know, she called him out on it, Hillary Clinton called him out on it, and he made mention of the fact that that's good business.
Exactly.
That he's eluded paying taxes, not even reporting taxes, but that he has not paid federal taxes, he looked at as a he looked upon that as a positive. That's good business. Is it?
Isn't it illegal? Can't he be sharing a cell with Willie Nelson?
It is good. I mean, it is good business.
He didn't pay taxes. Okay, can't he get arrested for
that? No, if he didn't pay taxes legally, if he legally used the laws of this country
to,
that's what I do. I legally use the tax laws to make my tax burden as small as possible. I think we all do. So if he's able to do that, that is good business, good for him. The question is, does that translate to being a president? You know, if you're benefiting from laws like this, can you be a president and expect other people to pay their taxes?
On your best year, best in terms of not paying a lot in federal taxes, zero in federal taxes, did you?
No, because the tax codes are written for the very rich.
Yeah.
And that's why people are able to take advantage of specific laws and rules to declare their income in different ways. It's happened here in Illinois. It happens elsewhere. It's all very legal, but it greatly reduces the tax liability. So maybe it is good business, but it's really bad politics, and that's why he doesn't want to release it.
But wasn't the counterpunch to that, or shouldn't the counterpunch have been, what if everybody in the country is doing what you were doing and finding loopholes and creative ways to not pay any federal taxes?
Right.
We would implode.
Well, the argument would be, what are you going to do to change it so that everyone pays their fair share?
I know.
And I don't know that he'd be willing to do that because, Hillary Clinton would argue he wouldn't because his tax plans benefit
the very rich
people who are closer to his income than are mine.
Right. All right. We want to discuss this further.
And
there's
we can
a whole
continue.
Lot to discuss.
We have Bridget Carey coming up at 10:45. So
yeah.
A quick
let's
break
talk and more. Yeah. We have got a little bit more time. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you right after the news. 312-981-7200 is our number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Those, of course, the highlights from last night's presidential debate. are there sniff checkers? Are there people checking to make sure those sniffs were legit? I hope there were. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder talking about last night's presidential debate. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but more people are saying Hillary Clinton won last night than Donald Trump. You decide. What'd you say? What'd you like? What didn't you like last night?
And we were talking about his not paying income tax, which
federal tax.
I'm sorry. Yes, which he then went on to say that's good business.
Yeah.
And Doug,
he seemed proud of it. He seemed. I don't know.
I would try to go. Oh, I paid something.
Right. Very nonspecific.
Doug, you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. Great show. Not for either candidate. But that's incorrect. I think what he said was, what was good business was when Mrs. Clinton said that it was about the real estate, about buying low. And mm-hmm. he said, that's good business. What he said during the taxes was that I'm smart, right? And I think as a private citizen, the obvious differences between the two candidates is that one's a private citizen and one's a public servant.
Mm-hmm.
And as a private citizen, absolutely, you want to take advantage of the laws of the land to minimize your tax burden, right? But what Mrs. Clinton fails to do is she talks about herself as if she's a champion of the middle class or lower middle class when she's exceedingly wealthy. So instead of saying those people, she should be saying we. I mean, what do you do as a wealthy person is that you set up nonprofit entities to try to lessen your tax burden. So really, there's just a lot of mistruths on both sides. It's just kind of apparent if you peel the onion a little bit.
But most candidates don't want to sell themselves to the country as being as wealthy as Hillary Clinton is, or as super wealthy as Donald Trump is, because then there's a disconnect. If you're watching and you're middle class, you're going, well, their problems aren't my problems.
Okay, but you can be filthy rich and be a champion of the poor, too, or the middle class.
Sure.
So one doesn't preclude the other.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with having taken advantage of what this country can offer people and being a successful person.
But
that shouldn't be looked down upon.
You're right. She missed an opportunity when he talked about cheering for the housing crash.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're right. That's when he said good business. She should have turned on him right then and said, right, but I'm not about good business and making money. I'm about the people who got kicked out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been a chance for her to really score on that, and she let it go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, it's cloudy on both sides, unfortunately.
Thank you, Doug. We appreciate you calling. There were a couple of times where I felt that Donald Trump was touting his successes more than what he would do for the country. And here's a little clip. He should win word of the day with this. Come on.
Very quickly. I am very underleveraged. I have a great company. I have a tremendous income. And the reason I say that is not in a braggadocious way. It's because it's about time that this country had somebody running it that has an idea about money. When we have $20 trillion in debt and our country's a mess, you know, it's one thing to have $20 trillion in debt and our roads are good and our bridges are good and everything's in great shape. Our airports are like from a third world.
Now, my question is, don't a lot of those federal taxes go to working on the infrastructure?
Sure.
The schools and bridges and airports.
He's very hung up on the airports. I've heard him on two different occasions, other than last night, talk about how we need to upgrade our airports.
Well,
our airports seem to be okay.
I don't think he's a guy who's ever in airports either.
Exactly.
But he's right.
He's braggadocious.
LaGuardia is a dump.
He's
right about that. But it's about infrastructure. You know, and getting and moving things around. I mean, most agree we are behind in that. I still don't know if bigly is a word. That's one of the things.
Right. Bigly is not a word.
Because he said he was going to, what, succeed bigly or cut taxes
like
bigly.
That. Yeah.
I think that's where he got the word. I thought it was braggadocious.
No.
Oh, no. It's supercalifragilisticexpialidocious,
yeah,
Joey. You were off by one docious. You know what else is kind of strange? Almost any time a city is mentioned, he points out that he cares because he has properties there.
I know. See, that hits me the wrong way.
He was talking about his hotel. He goes, I'm going to get to Pennsylvania Avenue one way or another.
That was hysterical. That was so funny to me. He amuses me.
But you know how, like, if somebody talks about the violence in Chicago, which they did last night, he has properties there. If it's a city that has a flooding problem, he cares because he has properties there. And that doesn't, I think for most people, myself included, I go, well, that must be nice to have properties in every major city, but most of us don't.
So you care about the people.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be more endearing for him to say, I care because I know people there, I have friends there, or even if he doesn't have anybody there, he cares about the people of that city. He cares about Chicagoans, or you pick the city. He always mentions, well, you know, that city means a lot to me. I got a hotel there. I got a building there.
I just watched the debate last night trying to see what Trump supporters see in him.
Yeah.
And I really had an open mind. There were things I agreed his business. Again, he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He knows how to make money, but he was braggadocious to me. And how is because you're a good businessman, meaning you're going to run a good country. And the thought of the sidebars that they kept showing, you're at a foreign policy meeting, and he's making these faces in the background. That frightens me.
Yeah, I know.
You didn't bring up the tweet about China yet either, and global warming, which was interesting. You know, where she said that he blamed global warming on China and
right.
a hoax, and he said directly, "It's not true, right? I didn't do it. No, I didn't. Something like that." And he did a few times, and that was one of the most retweeted tweets. Was a tweet from him. In 2012, when he blamed global warming on China, not as a polluter, but as someone who's created it,
right?
You know,
sure.
Fabricated it.
Sure.
So, how does he not remember that, or is he just choosing to say, "I did not say that"?
I think every politician has selective memory, don't they? I mean, you remember the things you want to remember, and you forget the things you want to forget, especially in politics. We see it all the time. He's good at it. I mean, Hillary Clinton is good at it too, at remembering the parts that she wants to remember. You know, so I guess we just have to figure out how much of it means what to us. You know, but we saw that throughout last night. For 90 minutes, we saw a lot of that. No, you did say that. No, I didn't say that. There was a lot of that.
And poor Lester Holt was trying to moderate.
For the most part. I thought he did a very good
job
for the most part.
It was the toughest job ever. And at one point, he and Donald Trump were talking at the same time. And I'm like, you go, Lester, because Lester wouldn't back down. He just kept talking. And then he finally just stopped talking and let Trump do it. It's a tough job.
I've told you this off air. I don't think Donald Trump is used to anybody ever superseding him. He's constantly in boardrooms where he's sitting at the front of the table. And who in that room is going to just
go. Yeah, you're right.
I know you're talking, Donald, but I am too.
And, you know, all of this talk about should they be fact checkers or not, it worked out. I mean, I think Lester Holt called Trump out on the Iraq war.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if he corrected or called out Hillary Clinton at all on anything that she might have said incorrectly. But, I mean, by and large, they left it to the candidates. And I thought Clinton was very smart to say, we've got a live fact check on my website.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
Because that does two things. That gets people looking at her view of the fact check. And it also gets a lot of email addresses for her campaign to use down the road.
Steve, do we know if Douglas MacArthur is displeased with her fact-checking? Because he pointed that out yesterday.
I follow MacArthur on Twitter, and I haven't heard from him.
All right.
I believe this is the most tweeted event in the history of Twitter,
and
we'll find out more as we continue with the Tech Tuesday and Bridget Carey next, 720 WGN.
While we wait for Bridget Carey, I just want to point something out. Last night, as we all mentioned earlier, he seemed fairly sedate in the first half, 35, maybe into the 40-minute mark. When things started to change a little bit, or change dramatically anyway, is when the part came about his taxes and his failure to disclose his federal income taxes. And do you remember the exchange where he said he's currently under audit? And I think they've said he's been under audits for the last 16 or 17 years. I don't know if they said that last night, but they've said that in the past about him, that he has now spent roughly 16 or 17 years being under audit. And Lester Holt was the one who pointed out that even under an audit, you can still disclose your income tax. There's no rule that says you can't. And he seemed very shaken up by that. Like, uh-oh, you guys aren't supposed to know that. But that was part of the challenge is, okay, let's say you are being audited, because he is being audited.
Right.
You can still do what we're asking. You can still show us. And that's when he got defensive and said, well, I'll show you as soon as we see all the emails that she, yeah.
Because he said, I will show you as soon as I am able, against the advice of my lawyers,
right.
I will show you, but when you're audited, you can't release them.
Right.
Total lie.
I don't know if it's a lie or just a creative way of presenting the fact that he has no intention of doing it. Because he's been saying he'll do it for years, and he still hasn't done it. And now is the most important time to do it, because every presidential candidate has done it for, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years, did they say last night?
Well, it's playing us for fools is what it is. I mean, that's, you know, I can't because I'm under audit. That is just not a valid reason not to release your taxes. And in an effort to be fair,
yes,
it's like when Hillary Clinton was asked about, you know, whether she scrubbed her email server, and she said, what, you mean with soap and water or something to that effect? I mean, that's an example on her side.
Of being creative instead of honest.
Yeah, when it comes to the audit thing, is just it's a fraud.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, well, I know Bridget's here, so we'll think about this later. What could he possibly be hiding? I mean, Hillary Clinton went through a litany
of reasons
why he wouldn't be disclosing his taxes. Each one of them alarming.
Well, I think he kind of copped to the fact and then decided that he didn't pay federal taxes. I think that's a big thing to hide.
Right.
I mean, but it's out there now.
Right.
Well, he didn't. It's not in black and white.
But the one that I don't think she stressed the most, which is the one that most people seem to think he's guilty of, is that he's doing business, fairly voluminous business, with the same countries like China that he keeps taking swipes at, that he's benefiting greatly from China. When he keeps saying to us, we need to cut these ties with China,
right.
It's hurting us, but it's helping him.
Well, that seems like all that matters to him. He doesn't mean to be braggadocious.
No.
Last night's Trump-Clinton matchup was the most tweeted debate ever. So that's on Twitter, most tweeted debate ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the top thing that was the most tweeted thing the whole night long was hashtag Trump's sniffle. That was
all right.
It stole the social media spotlight during Monday night's U.S. presidential debate.
And can I predict it'll be the number one selling Halloween costume this season?
Just a giant nose with a big orange
sniffle.
Hair.
Yes.
Bridget Carey is on the line with us, and he almost broke Twitter with his sniffle last night.
Yeah, you know, social media, they're all crunching the numbers, all the different, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Everyone wants you to now watch it on their social network to have a discussion, and Facebook's throwing in their side and saying their top social moment wasn't the sniffle, it was when Trump said his strongest asset was his temperament. So it depends on where you go.
That's pretty
where
good,
the conversation
too.
Kind of perspective. In fact, you know, some of us say, if you want to, argue and get really angry, go to Twitter during a debate. But if you want to kind of talk a little more civil, people tend to go to Facebook, and that's because they actually know people on Facebook, and they're a little more afraid to speak, you know, their true gut, you know, immediate reaction, as opposed to Twitter, which is a lot more of just general, you know, strangers or work acquaintances on Twitter, you know.
Absolutely. Bridget Carey is the CNET senior editor, host of the CNET Daily Update, and you have some Google news for us today.
Yes. Okay, so there is just a slew of new Google gadgets coming out next week. I mean, we've had a lot of early leaks and reports because Google's having this event on the 4th, on Tuesday. And because of all these pictures that are leaking in the reports, because nothing's ever a secret, right? We already know what their new phone's going to look like. It's going to be called a Pixel instead of called a Nexus. You're used to that naming. That's changing. So I think people might get a little confused there. But they're also going to confuse you because there's been talk about taking the Chrome operating system. That's something you hear on these Chromebooks, these special laptops, and merging it with Android's operating system. That's a report we've heard for some time now. We don't know if we're going to get a peek at it next week, but they are working on tablets and laptops to kind of merge both worlds. Because I think, I mean, my take is that Chromebooks. Chromebooks are unique, but they're not necessarily very popular because they don't run any program. It's not Windows, it's Chrome. So, you know, by merging it with Android, they're kind of able to open up the app, you know, world. They're kind of able to sell it to more people who maybe, you know, have an Android phone and they don't want to lose everything you have on the phone and bring it to the laptop. So we'll see how that merger kind of comes out. And there's more than just that, too. I know I'm going on and on here, but there's, like, a new Wi-Fi router and a new Chromecast for streaming that will be really expensive, $70. That'll stream 4K video. I don't know if I'll be into that because Roku just unveiled 5 new streaming devices, and their cheapest one's $30. So
is this like a foreign language to you, Bill?
I just wonder, will it supersede my Super 8 film projector? Because I carry that everywhere I go. Will I still need that?
First, for a vintage look. That's what they call things now.
Yeah.
Bridget, the kids at my kids' elementary school are using the Chromebooks, and they actually work out better. That's where they do all their homework, and it doesn't offer various other things so that kids can't go to various websites. Do you know what I mean? It's like they can kind of keep them.
Yeah.
They love them, and they're cheaper than giving each kid a MacBook.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Exactly. Schools are the biggest place where you'll find Chromebooks. Google has partnered with a lot of schools. They give them to classrooms, and that's really the place where they shine because of how much control they have and what you can download and not download on them and how teachers have programs where they can, you know, set exactly what they're being used for. And, you know, Apple tried doing that a little bit with their iPads and Macs by having these programs. But and same with Amazon with their Kindles. But the truth is that, yeah, they're expensive. And so when you have Chromebooks coming to the picture, they're cheap for schools, and that's why they excel in schools. But for most folks, they're not really, I guess, buying them for the home as much as a secondary computer, as Google kind of pitches them to be.
And the kids have to return them. It's not like they get to keep them. But it's instead of a textbook,
yeah.
I'm telling you, it makes homework more fun and helpful because some of the math problems, if you're kind of stuck on a problem, you can click this thing and it shows you how to work the problem.
Wow, that's very helpful.
They're going to not need teachers anymore.
It's going to be a big deal, though, if they do have all Chromebooks merge into this Android, you know, hybrid thing, because Android's not as safe. You know, it's open. And that's how, you know, we hear about stories about hacking and, oh, there's a bad app out there. And that's all Android. That's all Android's baggage. So, you know, schools are going to want to keep that separate. And it sounds like they're not going to abandon Chromebooks, but I'd be interested to see where things head in the future.
All right. So the big Google event is happening, did you say later this week?
It's actually on Tuesday the 4th,
okay.
So a week from now.
And what else do you have coming up on the CNET update for today?
Well, aside from breaking down all this Google stuff, you know, we've also been talking in the news about things that Apple's been working on. They're, like, looking to turn their health tracking stuff. You know how the Apple Watch can track your steps and can track, you know, how you, you know, all these different things about what you're doing. Well, they want to take that data and actually turn it into something that gives you advice. So the Apple Watch and Apple's HealthKit apps could eventually be like, hey, you should go see a doctor, or maybe you're not feeling so well. So eventually, you know, they want to take what they did to music and make it hard. Because when iTunes came out and you had all your music on iTunes, it made it hard to leave the iPod. You know, you already invested all this into Apple's world. And if all your health data is suddenly in Apple's world, it'll be hard to leave the iPhone and the Apple Watch. And so they're kind of looking in that same direction and making it so maybe doctors will want you to use this to report how you're doing. Or, I mean, the fact that I don't need my Apple Watch to tell me I'm sick. I mean,
that kind of scares me, though, that
I might be going.
That technology can say, you know, hey, you're packing on a few pounds. Maybe you should go to Weight Watchers. You know, I don't want to have that tight of a communication going with my phone.
I don't need that kind of guilt coming
exactly.
from a gadget.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. How's the baby?
Oh, adorable. Thank you. Lots of fun.
All right, great. She is Bridget Carey. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thanks.
Bridget Carey, host of the CNET update, a CNET senior editor. I said, we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
I thought you said that. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll find out what's in the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. And Bill, you know me. I have never done anything early. I'm usually last minute or late.
Right.
But we are going to talk about something before it happens on today's show. October, which October 1st is this Saturday, that is when Breast Cancer Awareness Month kicks off. But we're going to get a jump on this right now. In the studio, Kelly Jo Golson, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at Advocate Healthcare. How are you, Kelly Jo?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. And Dr. Heidi Memel, breast cancer survivor and breast surgeon at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge. Welcome to you as well, Dr. Memel.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Breast cancer is something that I would almost say has touched almost every listener's life in some way, shape, or form, either themselves or one of their family members. And this is something that has come a long way, where if you go get your mammograms, to know what's happening before it happens, it can be diagnosed with just like a little tiny pinprick now. Hasn't the mammography changed immensely in the last how many years? I mean, even from last year.
Absolutely. It has changed tremendously. Where just a few years ago, so many of the centers were still relying on the non-digital mammograms. Now we've moved to digital mammograms, which were a huge step up. And now we're even doing 3D mammography, which it's not only picking up more breast cancers, but it's significantly decreasing the rate at which we call back women from a screening mammogram. And we all know how anxiety-provoking that call is.
We were just talking about that off the air.
Yes.
I've been called back several times, and there's a lot of doubt and worry that goes through your mind. Some calcification showed up on a 3D mammogram, which I don't even really know what calcifications are. And they monitored them. They said, you know, you need to come back in 3 months and in 6 months. And then they monitored. There was no change. And they said, okay, you're back to once a year. So the callback freaks you out. But with these new technologies, you're not getting called back as much.
Absolutely. And that's one of the benefits to the newer imaging systems is that, you know, yes, we can detect something a little bit smaller, mm-hmm. or maybe it's not as obscured in the young woman with the dense breast tissue, but we're also having to not call a lot of women back for that second mammogram, which is, you know, as we know, it's a dreaded phone call.
Is the 3D technology available at pretty much all facilities now, or is it still just select locations?
All of our advocate sites now have 3D imaging, or will very shortly.
Yeah.
It's not available at all hospitals throughout the city or throughout the Midwest yet. But that's probably in the direction that we're going right now.
Good.
What age are we looking at for the first mammogram?
So the recommendations are still a little bit controversial, and a lot of it depends on your family history and your risk factors. But in general, we still like to see a woman at age 40 come in for her first mammogram and yearly thereafter. If a woman has a family history, we generally recommend starting a mammogram in the range of 10 years before her youngest family member was diagnosed. So
okay.
if somebody was has a mother that's been diagnosed at 45, we recommend she come in at 35 and start a screening mammogram.
My grandmother had breast cancer, and this was many, many, many years ago. And it wasn't the breast cancer that killed her. It was an infection from some of the burns from radiations and such. It was so archaic when you look back at how breast cancer was treated then, and now it has completely changed.
It has, absolutely. It's come such a long way. Our technologies have gotten not only better on the diagnostic side, but on the treatment side. Our mm-hmm. radiation techniques have improved. And in some cases, at Advocate, we have many women undergoing a lumpectomy, and they do a single dose of radiation to the lumpectomy site while they're in the operating room. If it's an early tumor. And that's it.
Wow.
All together at the same time.
Yes, instead of those 6 weeks of daily radiation treatments, some women qualify for that one dose in the operating room.
It's very successful. Oh, I'm sorry. You're still recommending a once-a-year checkup? Is that still standard?
Once-a-year physical exam by a doctor, absolutely.
Yeah. And a mammogram?
Yep. Yep.
I was a little late. I had put it off because you forget about yourself when you're a mom. You're taking care of the kids, the husband, and it's like, oh, God, it's been 2 years. And then you're like, oh, I know I have something wrong. I waited. Just get in there, you know? Don't let 2 years turn into 3 years.
Right. And that's one of the stories that we're talking about in the campaign is, you know, take care of yourself. It's the stories of the girls.
Exactly. And, you know, that's really why we launched Stories of the Girls, because we found out that it's upwards of 30% of women over the age of 40 haven't had a mammogram in 2 years. And so we really wanted to do something that was going to break through the clutter and really send that important message. Take care of your health. Prevention is key. Early diagnosis is key.
All right. And it doesn't hurt that bad, people. It really doesn't. It's such, it scares you. People go, oh, I don't want to go in there. Yes, they smash things. I'll say that. But it's a second of discomfort and it could save your life. I know men can get breast cancer. It's not as frequent, but it can happen. Do men, if someone in their family has had breast cancer as a male, is that someone who should go get a mammogram?
We tend to not recommend screening mammograms for men. What we do recommend is genetic testing if somebody has a very strong history of breast cancer in the family. For example, if there's a male in the family with breast cancer, that is, you know, kind of a red flag for genetic testing, maybe carrying one of those gene mutations. People who are diagnosed very young with a breast cancer, people with multiple breast cancers or ovarian cancer in the family, those are all indications that somebody should go and perhaps meet with a genetic counselor, talk about genetic testing, or even meet with a breast cancer specialist to talk about, are there other screening options that they should be looking at.
All right, Dr. Heidi Memel was just talking right there, breast cancer survivor and breast surgeon at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge. And we'll talk more with Kelly Jo Golson, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at Advocate Healthcare. And we'll talk about the hashtag Stories of the Girls campaign when we return. And any questions from women, I'm sure a lot of women have questions. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. Advocate Healthcare gearing up for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which kicks off this Saturday is October 1st. In the studio with us, Dr. Heidi Memel, breast cancer survivor and breast surgeon, Advocate Lutheran General, and Kelly Jo Golson, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at Advocate Healthcare. Tell us a little about this hashtag Stories of the Girls campaign. What are we supposed to do? Not necessarily take pictures of ourselves getting a mammogram and hashtag it, but what do we need to do for this campaign?
You bet. So Stories of the Girls was really our campaign that launched 3 years ago. And you know, we've spent some time talking this morning about the prevention, early diagnosis, the importance of that, of being able to save lives, and also just about how busy women are. You're working, you've got young children at home, you're busy just with life. And so this campaign is really designed to break through that clutter and to get this message out of prevention, get your screening. And at Advocate, we've really taken steps to make it easier. And what that means is we're offering same-day mammogram. Call today. We have 38 locations. We will get you in today to have your mammogram done. And guess what? We're also going to get you your results today. There's a lot of fear of the unknown. And so we really are trying to make it easier. And that's 100% of the focus is spreading the message, get your mammogram.
A couple of friends of mine had fine mammograms. They went yearly, everything. They found a lump doing a breast exam on their own in the shower. It turned out to be breast cancer. Sometimes that happens. What do we do about that?
It does. And we know that mammograms aren't perfect at picking up every single breast cancer, especially in somebody who's young and may have dense breast tissue. A mammogram may not be able to see that tiny little cancer hidden. But by a combination of all of these things, doing a yearly screening mammogram, we can pick it up when it's relatively small, still treatable, absolutely curable. And then by doing the other things that are good for you, going and seeing your doctor once a year, having a clinical exam once a year, doing a self-breast exam once a year, and basic breast awareness, things like knowing your family history, knowing if you're at higher risk for developing breast cancer, knowing all those healthy lifestyle choices which help reduce your risk of developing breast cancers, those all play into effect.
And, you know, I'll admit it now, I have dense breasts. They're kind of dumb. Duh. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to determine a lump.
Right, right.
So the self-exam is not as easy.
Self-exam is not as easy. Mammography is not quite as good in younger women with dense breast tissue. And for those younger women with very dense breast tissue, people with a family history who are at a little bit higher risk, then mammogram might not be your only screening tool. We may be able to add in screening MRIs or screening ultrasounds once a year that have a little bit higher rate of detection.
Heidi, I think you said a little while ago, self-exams once a year. That's not the right number,
sorry,
is
once
it?
A month.
Once a month. Okay. Just making
sorry,
sure.
Sorry, I misspoke.
Okay.
All right. A bunch of older women have called in and said, I haven't had a mammogram in a while. I'm 72. I'm 69. Do I still need a yearly mammogram?
So a yearly mammogram is still recommended as long as you're healthy enough to undergo a breast cancer diagnosis and treatment if it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, at 69, if you're still young and healthy and active, mm-hmm. absolutely, it's still important to get a screening mammogram.
What is the breast cancer gene?
You're probably referring to the BRCA
yes.
mutations. There are two genes that were found years ago, BRCA 1 and 2. And if you're a carrier of one of those mutations, you're at a much higher risk of developing breast cancer in your lifetime, in the range of about 60 to 80%.
That's pretty high.
It is very high. So we try to diagnose women with a mutation very early in life, in their 20s and 30s, so that we can begin screening very early on, instead of starting at 40, where we'd miss a whole lot of women that develop breast cancer. We try to start screening in the range of 25 or 30. We can also make some recommendations for breast cancer risk reduction or prevention. So those risk reduction options can actually save lives.
Heidi, I'm curious what you think. We were talking about Angelina Jolie the other mm-hmm. day because of her split. She elected a couple of years ago to have a double mastectomy because of her history or family's history with breast cancer. Is that something you recommend with any regularity, or is it a case-by-case basis with something like that?
So she was a carrier of one of those BRCA mutations. And yeah. for young women with a BRCA mutation, we actually do. That is the recommended preventative option, is having a bilateral mastectomy, because we see that women in their premenopausal years, so generally in their 30s and 40s, who opt to do a preventative mastectomy, it reduces their risk of dying from breast cancer.
Because mm-hmm. you said if you're carrying that gene, you're 60 to 80% more likely to get breast cancer?
Not 60 to 80% more likely, but your chances of developing breast cancer in your lifetime are 60 to 80%. And those
That's
are,
way too high.
It's way too high. And those are more often aggressive cancers as well in those gene mutation carriers. So we're very careful, and we try to detect those women very young.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I see patients in my office, if they have a family history of breast cancer, if there's somebody young in their family diagnosed with breast cancer, if there's a male with breast cancer, ovarian cancer in the family, even pancreatic cancer in the family, we have them see a genetic counselor to try to detect, are they a carrier of one of these mutations?
Yeah.
And there have been so many advancements in the world of genetic testing recently, even in the past couple of years, that we can detect more and more of these mutations and literally catch more things early mm-hmm. and even prevent breast cancers.
You can't make people go get a mammogram, but the hashtag Stories of the Girls campaign hopefully will help you remember. I try to go every year on my birthday. Not on my birthday, but in my birthday month, I try to schedule it. And now the iPhone is a pretty great thing, because when you have to schedule it 6 months down the road or a year down the road, send a reminder for yourself. It'll pop up. And I have to actually get mine in October. So Breast Cancer Awareness Month kicks off this Saturday, October 1st. Schedule your mammogram. Is that all the advice you have for us, is just get there and do it?
Absolutely. We just encourage, you know, not only for you to do it for yourself, but it's a great time to reach out to your girlfriends, your family, your mother, your coworkers.
Yeah.
Encourage everyone to do it. Our patients have been an active part in developing the Stories of the Girls campaign. Stories, you can go to visit storiesofthegirls.com. You can call 1-800-3-ADVOCATE. But they really have rallied around this message of wanting to inspire and encourage women. Take control of your health. Go and get your mammogram.
And I just want to stress something you said earlier. Same day appointments and same day results. That's almost unheard of in the medical field. So that's a very good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
Make it a girl's day out. Go take all your girlfriends, go get a mammogram, and then go get manis and pedis. Doesn't that sound like a good plan?
Absolutely. Right.
Sounds great.
We also have a
mammies
really...
and pedis. Can I just quickly copyright that before anybody says
hurry them. Up.
All right, it's done.
What did you want to say, Dr. Melmel?
I also just wanted to mention that October 1, we're kicking off Breast Cancer Awareness Month at Advocate. We have an Advocate Breast Cancer Symposium, or a Breast Health Symposium. It's for the public and also for medical professionals. There are two tracks, and it features speakers from all of the Advocate sites about breast cancer prevention, about genetic testing, about mammograms and the recommendations. It also features a keynote speaker, Juliana Rancic, mm-hmm. is speaking about her story and her diagnosis and battle with breast cancer.
And where do we go to find out more information on this event or just mammograms in general?
storiesofthegirls.com/symposium.
Thank you so much for coming up. Kelly Joe Golson, Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer at Advocate Health, and Dr. Heidi Memel, breast cancer survivor, breast surgeon at Advocate Lutheran General. Thank you so much. Continued
Thank
success.
You. Thank you.
Thanks so much. A quick break and then the news. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. If you'd like to reach us, please do, 312-981-7200. We were discussing earlier in the show last night's debate. A lot of people talking about it today for obvious reasons, thousands of obvious reasons. There was a moment during the debate toward the end where Donald Trump, was being asked about the way he perceives Hillary Clinton in the fact that she does or doesn't look like the president. And that became a discussion about a woman named Alicia Machado, who was a Miss Universe winner in 1996. And after winning the title of Miss Universe, gained a fairly considerable amount of weight, and upwards of 60 pounds. Donald Trump has mentioned that incident and talked about what a nightmare it is. He's still talking about it.
A nightmare to whom?
Well, to the beauty pageant. Just the way it's set up is it's a beauty pageant, and in his eyes, and other people's eyes too, I guess, although it's Donald Trump we're talking about, this wasn't the best thing for the pageant to have this woman represent Miss Universe.
Was she still having the crown when she gained the weight?
Well, she was, and then they stripped her of the title because, you know, it was
decided.
Where
was I during this?
Well, it's a long time ago. It's 1996. So
yeah,
I'm sure for many people it's a forgotten incident, but it was kind of rehashed last night. And as Hillary Clinton pointed out, that she's now a U.S. citizen and she will be voting. And he's still talking about it. He was still answering earlier this morning about what a disgrace this was to have this woman who had had problems with anorexia and bulimia for 5 years prior to gaining all the weight. So over at Huffington Post, they've selected other things that Donald Trump has said. You know, his supporters have said much of what he has said about women have been in the past, but Huffington Post found a multitude of things that he has said in the last year about women, all of them, I would say, on the negative side. Can I share some of them?
Yes,
with you?
Because that's when my cable went out last night. I missed the last 20 minutes of the debate.
That might have been a blessing, not a curse.
It was the most, I would say,
damn, I'm pissed I missed it now.
As time went on, it got a little bit more heated, and especially the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, the gloves came off.
They really did. He also, for many of us wondering where things stood with Rosie O'Donnell, he cleared that up.
Why does he even bring that up?
He was the victim. Rosie O'Donnell was mean to him.
Please.
All right, so here's a bunch of things that Mr. Trump has said about women just in the last year while running for president. Most of these are fairly well documented. He said that Megyn Kelly had blood coming out of her, and I quote here, wherever.
Yeah, that was
stupid. He's talking about why she was so mean to him during an earlier debate, a Republican candidate debate, and that's how he explained it, you know, why she was in such a bad mood.
You know, a bully can get bullied, but it's funny that he is saying people are mean to him.
Right. Well, he always talks about the fact that he only attacks when attacked.
Are we back on the playground?
Yeah.
In grade school.
Donald Trump said that no one could possibly vote for Carly Fiorina because of her face.
I remember that.
That was not nice.
It's just rude.
Yes. He said that Hillary Clinton was disgusting for going to the bathroom. This was during the Democratic debate when she had to use the facility.
Hasn't he read the book Everyone Poops?
Actually, not only has he read it, but my books on tape version of it has Donald Trump reading it. And what a stirring rendition he does.
I'm reading that.
Donald Trump said that Hillary Clinton got schlonged by Obama in the 2008 campaign, which led to another debate of people wanting to know if Donald understands what that word means or not. Was that word chosen intentionally or not intentionally? Schlonged.
Stop saying it on the air.
Sorry. He said that women who get abortions should be punished.
I remember that, too.
That didn't sit well with everybody, as I'm sure you would imagine. In a March interview with MSNBC's Chris Matthews, Donald Trump said there has to be some sort of punishment for abortion. He said that just this year,
I remember.
In the 1700s. If you were ever to be banned in the United States, the punishment should then fall upon the women, he said. Yet again, Trump later tried to backtrack on this, clarifying that the person performing the abortion should be held legally responsible, not the woman, even though that's what he said earlier, a stance that's not really any more supportive of women's fundamental rights to control their own body. He said that the only card Hillary Clinton has is the woman card. I think that's the least gouging so far.
Yeah, I agree.
That one's not terrible.
It's babyish, though.
It is babyish. This one was sort of hurtful. That as a Muslim woman, Ghazala Khan probably isn't allowed to speak. That was the Gold Star family issue he had last month.
Because she was too distraught over her son's death and was unable to speak.
Right.
And he was figuring, well, no, they just don't let them speak.
Right.
I remember that, too. Boy.
Not that she was too upset to speak, but
no.
As...
They don't
because
allow
the culture
her.
Will not allow her to speak, which was not the case at all. Donald Trump said that he'd expect his daughter to quit if she was harassed at work. Again, the critics of that saying, wouldn't you fight it? Why should you have to quit if you're harassed, if you're sexually harassed? Why should you have to quit? Stand up for your rights. But he saw it otherwise. He is quoted as saying that Hillary Clinton's brain doesn't work.
That's nothing. That is very... grammar school.
Isn't it?
Your brain doesn't work.
At a rally this summer, Donald Trump added fuel to the Hillary is unhealthy fire and tapped into the long history of discrediting women by calling them either crazy, hormonal, or biologically unfit to hold positions of power by saying that she, Hillary Clinton, has a short circuit in her brain. She's got problems, Trump said. Honestly, I don't think she's all there.
Could I just put out a call to any woman who is supporting Trump? Could you call us at 312-981-7200 and explain why you are after all these comments?
You know, it's funny because it's not funny. It's tragic funny that like one or two of these you'd go, oh, man, what a terrible thing to say. But there's a bushel of these. There's no shortage of these. He followed up his comment about Hillary Clinton's brain not working by suggesting, and I quote again here, that maybe someone should just shoot her.
Remember that, too.
Yeah. At a rally this summer, Donald Trump first warned that if Clinton is allowed to nominate Supreme Court justices, that there is nothing you can do, folks. But then he added, and again, quotes here, although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is. I don't know, he said. Trump's team attempted to clarify that he was not actually promoting the idea of shooting the first woman to ever secure the Democratic nomination. Rather, he was trying to energize people to turn out to the polls.
Is that what it's called?
The words suggest otherwise. But Trump once again invoked the threat of gun violence against Clinton this fall, suggesting that her bodyguard should stop protecting her because of her thoughts on gun control, and then see what happens.
Again, we would like to talk to the women who are supporting Trump. And after hearing this, does this change your mind? Does it not matter? 312-981-7200.
And by the way, there's bunches more of these. There's no shortage of these. And these are just in the last year since running, because so many people on his side said, you know, you can't hold him responsible for something he may have said 15 or 20 years ago. Okay, let's separate those for just a little bit. These are all things he has said while running for the office of president.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow.
You know, the only irony I find in this is that his daughter is such an independent woman with a career and children, and it's just like, is this his dad? I mean, it just doesn't match up.
No, and he's got a woman running his campaign.
Right.
And I've seen her on a couple shows where they say to her, you know, words to the effect of, why would you do this? But I mean, I get it. It's a job. So that's why you would do it. But how can you defend, like, one or two of these is a mistake, like I said. But when
there's
countless numbers of these.
And I would just expect Ivanka, who is a strong, independent woman, as you mentioned, Kim, to say something like, Dad, you can't say stuff like that.
Right.
It just rubs people the wrong way.
Right. All right. You're getting your calls. Should we take a quick break? We'll talk to you next. And like I said, there's no shortage of these if you want more.
You have more?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stick around. More of us, Bill and Wendy, WGN. There was an exchange in last night's debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton where they brought up Alicia Machado. She is a former Miss Universe winner who Donald Trump wasn't pleased with because upon winning the title of Miss Universe, she put on 60 pounds. Donald Trump said some very negative things about her at the time. This became a little bit of a conversation last night about his treatment toward women. And then in Huffington Post today, they list a whole bunch of things that Mr. Trump has said about women just in the past year while running for president, not way back in his past, but just fairly recently.
And I just would love to talk to some women Trump supporters who are okay with this. And then someone texted, how about men who have daughters? How can they support him? That's a great question.
Yeah.
All right. We've opened up the phone lines and there are not a lot of women calling.
It's been, even though you asked not just mostly women, you said if you're a woman who wants to vote for Trump, please contact us. Most of the calls have been from guys. I know we just got some very angry texts going, well, let's hear those women. We were waiting for them. All the calls have been from men.
But Mary, we've got you.
Yeah, great.
All right.
I became a Trump supporter today, actually.
Because why, Mary?
Because of the bias of the media. You're going to tell stories about, you know, Trump. I am not a supporter of some of the things he says, but I am not a supporter of the things Hillary says either. And the media ignores the things she says and just tells us all the negatives about Trump. There's been books written about things she's said to people from former employees and from former state workers and
like what do you have some
like awful no I'm not going to give you examples. Go read the book. There's books written. Why don't you bring up some of that thing, those things? Are there books written about Trump?
He wrote it. Art of the Deal.
Okay, you're going to use that, but you will not talk about the negative things that are said that she has said. And that's why I probably will vote for Trump, because
of the media.
I am amazed at the bias, and he does not get a fair shake.
But Mary, just give us one example.
Things,
I just gave you 10. I just gave you 10 examples of outrageous things Donald Trump has said this year. Just
well, why
give
don't
us
you
one.
Give me examples? That's what I'm saying is I want you to give me examples from both of them, the negative
well,
things.
Well, there aren't any. There aren't
oh,
any as outrageous
no
as this.
Things that she
no,
said
there's plenty
about
of negative
women, about her husband. Like she said negative things to people, swearing and cursing, and you never bring up any of that. How about other negative things that she's done? She's been in the government for 30 years. Let's hear some negative, at least spend as much time on negatives for her, and then we can make a decision. But the media will not.
Then don't rely on the media, Mary. You said you are a Trump supporter, and that's all fine and good.
Well, I am going to.
Because of the media, that's kind of a silly way of voting. I'm going to vote for Trump because the media is mean to him.
Because they're mean to them, Tim?
Mary, can I get just? I'm going to just pick one example.
It's more than being mean. There's an agenda to get rid of Trump and Hillary. We don't like either of them. I don't think you do either.
We don't, but
you're making
no. But I'm telling you, last night's debate made me
biased.
More confident in my vote.
He has said negative things about women.
But Mary, as a woman, you're not offended. I just gave you 9 or 10 examples of things.
I'm offended by things he says. But what's my choice? Hillary? She says negative things about women too. Plus, she's has
not like this.
Negative. But the media is what's making my choices because they're not being fair. Yeah.
So who wins then, Mary? The media, you, or Trump?
We need a change. We need a change that the media doesn't have to say so. That's why I'd vote for Trump.
All right. Well, cool.
It's because the media is biased and they are not playing fair.
All right.
Thank you for
thanks,
calling, Mary. We appreciate it.
I just would have wanted one example. I mean, she was very general.
No, we
in the
have
examples.
To do our homework. It's up to us. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi there. I still am going to vote for Trump, and that's because I vote my pocketbook, and I know that she's going to raise taxes sky high, and guess who's going to pay the bulk of it? The middle class. She's always touting the middle class, but forget it. They stiff the middle class. It's disappearing, all the manufacturing jobs, just like they said. She was in favor of NAFTA. NAFTA is what got rid of all those manufacturing jobs, not coming back. Also, she has called anybody who's voting for Trump deplorables. That's one thing.
That was not a good statement. I got to tell
you. It wasn't.
She named calls, but you know what? The media doesn't focus on some of the bad things that she says. And also, as far as women are concerned, she her last name is Roderick, the rape victims of Bill Clinton. She lambasted them for speaking out. And, you know, where's her women's rights ideas? How come she doesn't speak out against all the terrible things that are happening to women in the Middle East?
Did you just say the rape victims of Bill Clinton? Did I hear that right?
Right.
Bill Clinton's raped women?
Well, you know, some of them. Mm. What is it, Crawford? Brad? You know, there's several.
I don't know that
he raped him?
I don't know that he's raped any women.
Well,
affairs? Had affairs?
Well, there's one that I know that he threw her against the wall or
Bill
something.
Clinton did this?
Yeah, and he raped her. That's what.
Where'd you find
Donald
this?
Trump tell you that?
What's her name? Broderick. Well, you guys know the names. You should know it because you're news people. And I want to ask you, who do you get your news from? Who do you rely on? You always say, you know, well, who do you listen to? Well, who do you listen to?
I go to MSNBC. I go to CNBC. I go to NBC. I go to ABC.
And then
I
listen to
Huffington
Bill.
Post.
All of them liberal. As we pointed out
the other day.
Do you ever listen to Rush Limbaugh?
No.
I do, but it doesn't sit well with me.
No, you don't.
Believe me, I do.
If you don't listen, okay, but Wendy said no.
I do not listen to Rush Limbaugh. I have. It gives me a headache. It raises my blood pressure, and I don't believe a lot of the things he says.
Well, then how can you have a equal evaluation?
I don't. I know the candidate that...
side, I listen to both sides, and then I decide. Even if it's offensive to me, I'll listen to it to know where these people are coming from. Now, you can't evaluate, equally, or you can't be fair if you don't listen to both sides.
I agree with that.
I do. We have to take a break.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, though. We appreciate it, Roxanne. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
All right. Yes.
I got to leave early today because I have a doctor's appointment, and I'm glad.
All right. We'll find out what Steve.
Good
Bertrand
luck with the rest
has.
Of the afternoon.
We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has. No, don't. I hope the phones are broken like they were yesterday. Whoever broke the phones yesterday, please break them again, Joey. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve Bertrand is here. He's the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch, but you already know that. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Bill. You know, Wendy, Donald Trump brought up Ford early in the debate last night about $1.8 billion in investment in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And Ford is fighting back, saying, yeah, but it's like $14 billion in the U.S., and we've created 28,000 jobs in 5 years. Anyway, John Najarian is going to be with us, and I want to just ask him about taking on a, you know, corporate icon like that and if it's hurt their business.
Right.
So we'll talk to him about that. Suzanne Mushin is in with Wrangler, has a new ad to try to empower women.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted it on my Facebook page, so check it out. Let me know what you think. But it's supposed to empower women, and it has a lot of pictures of women in their jeans and how nicely they fit. Views from the back.
Oh, sure.
So we'll see how that goes. All Suzanne, we'll kick that around.
Kim, you've been in radio a long time, haven't you? How many years, roughly, have you been in radio?
Over 20.
20 years?
Yes.
I don't know if you've ever seen anything like this. I've never seen anything like this. I've been in radio for a couple of weeks. Wendy left early just because she was so emotionally distraught over last night's debate. She just said, I can't do this anymore, and just left. I've never seen anything like
that. It's a first, but you know what? It's understandable.
Right. Very, very interesting conditions the last couple of weeks and months. We've been talking a lot about last night's debate, and we'll continue to. There was a lot that was said, a lot that was heard, a lot that was kind of studied since last night. But of all the things that Hillary Clinton said and all the things that Donald Trump said, I would say to you that the most interesting thing I heard was not from either of them, but from Chris Christie. I don't know if you got a chance to see this yesterday, Kim. He was on MSNBC immediately after the debate, and Brian Williams was talking to him. Now, Chris Christie, I'm sure you know his history. Governor of New Jersey, ran for president himself, didn't do very well. After he bowed out, he then became a Donald Trump supporter. He is now part of, if not the leader of his transition team, Donald Trump's transition team.
Him and Rudy Giuliani seem to be the two front runners,
right.
The two leaders.
Right.
Leaders of the band, as we might say.
Yes, yes. Very accurate. Last night, immediately after the debate, Brian Williams has Chris Christie on, and he asks him a question about fact-checking. And I think his answer, Chris Christie's answer, is really the most telling of anything that happened all day, all night last night. You'll hear a little bit of background before we get to the fact-checking, but pay very, very close attention to Chris Christie's view on fact-checking during a debate, because it's very fascinating. Listen to this. It's from last night.
Devil's advocate, the people who had problems with previous presidential debates at this level of play didn't have problems with lies being told and didn't have, we've got fact-checking memos, we will get around to reading on the air, but page after page after page, the likes of which we haven't seen, and our immediate reaction was, that was two wholly different conversations taking place, both on live television in a split screen.
Well, Brian, listen, there, you know, if we're going to rely all the time on the fact checkers who also have an agenda, then we could discuss that as well. But what we also know is that Mrs. Clinton wasn't answering a lot of the questions that she was uncomfortable with tonight. She wasn't addressing some of it. I sat there and listened, and there were some questions she answered. There were many questions that she didn't answer. Now, if that's a fact check problem or that's an honesty problem.
All right. Did he say what I thought he said, which is, and I quote, "We cannot rely on the fact checkers who also have their own agenda." He said that, right?
Yes, he did.
Isn't the fact checkers' agenda the most important agenda?
You would think, and that so, is... and you think they would be the new most neutral, biased, unbiased people right. that are involved.
You would think.
I mean, and a fact is a fact. You look it up, you verify it.
Right.
How do you have an agenda with that? You're trying to dispel all the agendas.
Yeah, the mere existence of the fact checker is to report on the facts, to let you know that this is an unbiased truth, not your opinion, not her opinion, not their opinion, not our opinion. It's the fact. That's why they're called fact checkers.
Right, and then take that fact and form your own conclusion and your own opinion and
right.
go with the way you feel most comfortable.
All right, so tell me this then. If you're involved in politics, and he has been for years, Chris Christie has been for years, and the reason we're discussing any of this is political, when you're saying something like that, do you understand what you're saying? Is he just saying it to fill time, or is he trying to convince Brian Williams and anybody watching, boy, Chris Christie's onto something. Those fact checkers have their own agenda. They're trying to screw us up with the truth, and there's no place for truth in this argument.
Maybe Chris Christie needs to go fact check his bridge, you know, what went on with the bridge. But, you know, I think it goes to earlier to some of the callers you had that, you know, people just read things and take it for what it is and
right.
don't always fact check the facts. And then they have the wrong information, but then they are afraid to just say it's not true, you know, because people take things sometimes for what looks to be reality, and sometimes it always isn't.
Through much of that debate last night, through nearly 90 minutes of that debate last night, as Hillary Clinton was saying various things, as Donald Trump was saying various things, I'm sitting there going, okay, I don't have the ability right now to know how much of this is accurate and how much of this is inaccurate. However, I will spend some time either later on tonight or tomorrow going through this, and there are countless sources, countless fact-checking sources on the internet. You can rely on any one of them. But for anybody, especially Chris Christie, who's involved with the campaign of one of the candidates, to say that you can't rely on those fact checkers because they have their own agenda, that couldn't be more wrong.
Right.
That's exactly what you should rely on.
People are going to spin it. All the you know, each camp is going to spin it however they
sure.
want to spin it.
Sure.
I mean, Donald Trump just tweeted not more than 15 minutes ago, "I won the presidential forum. Looks like I won this debate. Nice." I mean,
isn't that crazy?
Everywhere you hear.
Right.
Hillary Clinton won the debate, but, you know, apparently he's taken both wins.
All right, let's go to the calls. Thank you, Kim, on that. 312-981-7200. That's the call line. That's the text line. Let's start out with Carol. Carol, you heard it, right? Chris Christie said you can't believe the fact checkers. They have an agenda, do they?
I do believe they can have an agenda. And first of all, as a general rule, there's nothing to say that they're going to speak out. If the fact, you know, they're not going to point out every fact that was wrong. So, for example, if they're pro-Hillary, they might not point out all of hers, or pro-Trump, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one thing. But you can't forget what happened with Candy Crowley in the debate with President Obama and I already forgot his name, Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
You know, she was wrong, and she really threw Romney because he thought he was right, but she kept saying, no, you're wrong. And then later on, of course, it came out that she was wrong. And so I personally believe that fact-checking, that the point of a debate is for two people to argue their points and also, you know, take note of something that the opponent said that was wrong.
Did you watch the debate last night, correct, Carol?
I watched some of it. It's too much for me to handle the whole thing.
I get it. Believe me. All right. So were there any moments that you felt, because there were a lot of people prior to the debate trying to figure out exactly how much say Lester Holt should have throughout the debate as to fact checking, Did you see any glaring examples of him overstepping his boundaries as the host last night? I didn't.
I would say that he went after Trump more than he went after Clinton.
Yeah.
But overall, I would, and you got to remember, he is actually a Republican. So if that makes any difference, I think that he did not show extreme bias. I think everybody might show a little bit, but I can't, since I didn't see the whole thing, I can't definitely say that.
That's fair. All right. All right. Well, thank you, Carol. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Take care. Let me get another call in real quick. Hey, whoop, lost you. Patty, is that you?
Hello.
Hi, Patty. There you are. Hi, it's WGN. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Hi. Well, yes, very easy question. Who pays the fact checkers? Maybe they do have another agenda.
I'm not sure how exactly they get paid. I know there's several websites. Like I said, the one that I usually use is one called PolitiFact, and I looked them up this morning. And I think they're fairly unbiased. I'll read you some of the facts from last night. They really do. They point out how often and how what exactly Donald Trump said that was inaccurate, and the same with Hillary Clinton. I don't know how they make their money. I'll be honest with you. I imagine it has something to do with their website and sponsorship, but I'm not 100% sure. But but I get what you're saying, that there must be some way that they get compensated. And if they're slanted, it could be based on that. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Patty. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll go through some of these. Like I said, there are countless sources if you're looking for the facts of what was said last night online. The one I tend to trust the most is one called PolitiFact, but there are several other good ones. I'll tell you some of the things that were said last night that weren't exactly true. That's coming up next. If you want to jump in, please do. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. Wendy went home. She'll be back tomorrow, I promise. It's WGN. All right, we're talking about the fact-checking that went on after last night's debate. I just ran you a soundbite of Chris Christie talking to Brian Williams on MSNBC. Joey, do you have that queued up? Is there some way to play that again? Because I have to be honest, two different texts have said, if you listen to what Chris Christie said, he didn't say only that Donald Trump was having trouble with the facts, but that Hillary Clinton was as well, that there were questions that she did not answer. And in all fairness, he did say that, and in even more fairness, he's accurate in that. Both of them, as is the way in politics, when asked a question that they weren't 100% thrilled with answering, answered a totally different question. That happened several times last night. I imagine it'll happen several times in the future. This is Chris Christie again on MSNBC last night explaining to Brian Williams that the fact checkers have their own agenda. Listen.
The devil's advocate, the people who had problems with previous presidential debates at this level of play didn't have problems with lies being told and didn't have, we've got fact-checking memos, we will get around to reading on the air, but page after page after page, the likes of which we haven't seen. And our immediate reaction was, that was two wholly different conversations taking place, both on live television and a split screen.
Well, Brian, listen, if we're going to rely all the time on the fact checkers who also have an agenda, then we could discuss that as well. But what we also know is that Mrs. Clinton wasn't answering all of the questions that she was uncomfortable with tonight. She wasn't addressing some of it. I sat there and listened, and there were some questions she answered. There were many questions that she didn't answer. Now, if that's a fact check problem or that's an honesty problem.
He's right about the second part. Both of them had certain questions that they avoided a little bit or answered something that was slightly different from what Lester Holt was asking. But to say that we can't rely on the fact checkers, that they have their own agenda, that's the part I think I have a hard time with. On PolitiFact, now I mentioned this earlier, they're one of several. They're one of many, many different websites you can visit where they'll go over the different questions and answers from last night. This is the data they came up with. When fact checked for a week, Hillary Clinton told one untruth, which is political speak for lie. Hillary Clinton told one untruth every 12 minutes. That's when fact check for a week. While Donald Trump told one every 3.25 minutes. That's an in both cases, those are alarming numbers. And I guess throughout the course of our day, who amongst us doesn't tell an untruth from time to time, but most of us aren't running for president. Only two of us are running for president. I have a breakdown on some of the things that were brought up last night, some of the questions and their answers and their accuracy. As I mentioned on PolitiFact, I think they do a fairly good job of scrutinizing both candidates. Let me get a call in really quickly or two. Before...
Right. So, you know, Hillary Clinton during the debate said, go to my webpage for the fact checks.
Right.
I wouldn't, you know.
That's fairly a biased website.
Right. Those are going to be her fact checkers. You know. But PolitiFact, I think, is pretty widely accepted as
isn't
fair.
It, Steve? It's independent.
Absolutely.
Right? A caller asked a little while ago before you sat back down, if there is an agenda, what is in it for them? How are they getting paid over at PolitiFact? Do you know the answer to that? Because I don't.
We could look it up. They're probably funded. I think it's the guy who used to be at CNN years ago. They're probably funded by a foundation or something. I'll look that up. I don't know.
But
I know the Washington Post does it as well.
The Washington Post is great at it. But to your knowledge, they're not funded by one side or the other.
No,
I mean that's
not PolitiFact.
They're not.
I think they're pretty widely respected.
Let's start out with Dale. Dale, thanks for hanging on. What did you want to say?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Like your show.
Thank you.
And I saw the whole debate last night, and you know, I heard saw what Christie said, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's gonna say that because he's, you know, a surrogate, you know, for Trump.
Right.
You know, and so, but, you know, the fact is that if they say something that's not true, it's not true. There's no Republican, Democrat, you know, this is a Republican untruth.
There shouldn't be a slant to it. A truth is a truth and a lie is a lie, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So to say that, you know, it makes Christie look stupid, number one. And again, you know, it's no wonder, like, you know, he lost the will, I guess, to run again. You know, so... you know, it doesn't do him any good. And just like Trump tweeting out, yes, I won the debate, you know, the polls say I won, so I won the debate. You know, that's just a psych job. You know, he doesn't want to, he can't say that he lost. He just can't say it.
Yeah.
Too much, you know.
I'm trying to remember back, Steve, 4 years ago when it was so obvious to everybody, supporter or non-supporter, of President Obama's, that he out and out lost that first debate. Did he comment, were there comments anywhere as to whether or not he felt he won it when it was just obvious that he lost it 4 years ago? I don't remember that.
I don't remember that, but I don't remember that he would say, hey, I got thumped either.
Right.
You
what's
know?
It, what's
I
mean,
no
good
candidate
that?
Is going to say I lost right. that debate last
Dale,
year.
Dale, I appreciate the call, Dale. Have a great day.
Thanks, you
Take
too.
Care. Now, if I can, again, several people have said, well, you're leaning way to the left on this. How about making this a little more even? So I will for a second. One of Hillary Clinton's higher-ups was also interviewed there on MSNBC just a little while after the debate. Their coverage went well into the night, as you can imagine. And he alluded to the fact that he wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
That you just, saw this. That Donald Trump.
He just made
cited,
this up, I think.
Yeah. It was as unfounded as could be, his claim. He wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump just sat out the next couple of debates after what he saw last night. And then Rachel Maddow was actually the one who said, well, you know, he's going to be side to one side on this, obviously. He's on Hillary Clinton's
campaign.
Sure, John
Podesta was
That was the guy, yeah, John yeah, Podesta, right. Yeah. That was him. So I don't know where he got that. Although there was a rumor of it somewhere else prior to the debate that it wouldn't be shocking for him to only do one of these and then call it a day whether he won or lost. So Podesta was probably just piggybacking off of that. But still, that's...
But that's how it works. So, you know, if look at it this way. So Podesta is on TV and he floats that out there last night. You know,
yeah.
I don't think he's going to show up at the other debates.
Right.
And so now that becomes a question. And this morning, Hillary Clinton's taking questions on her plane and she says, she's asked, you know, do you think Trump's going to show up for the next debates? And she said, well, I'm going to be there. That's what I know. So, you know, the operative the night before plants the notion.
Right.
The candidate gets asked about it and gets to, you know, be made look like this professional sort of tough actor. And people will be asking Donald Trump, you're going to show up? You're going to show up?
That all right. Be honest. That's a little unfair. I mean, it
unfair?
Is.
Unfair?
It's so unfair.
And,
because you're creating your own reality.
Well, that's what they. That's no. It's not unfair. He's just doing his job.
I guess
you know, that's like Kellyanne Conway, the Trump equivalent, was on TV talking about how Hillary Clinton was looking glib, Right. And, you know, things like that. So she's trying to frame the debate from the Trump standpoint, just as Podesta was from the Clinton.
Who's the Fox guy? Is it Brit Hume, who's been criticized because
what does it even mean? Yeah.
Well, yeah. He said, what does it even mean? And then he also talked about how Mrs. Clinton last night was unattractive. What does that have to do with anything?
I didn't see it, so I wasn't going to bring it up, but I just alluded to it. But I saw a tweet where he said, what does stronger together even mean?
Right.
Is that
words to that effect.
I don't want to put
close.
Too much. It was just a tweet I saw, but that's kind of an odd thing to say.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve had this for the news, and then I haven't gotten to these, but PolitiFact went out of their way to really scrutinize everything both candidates said last night. So we'll go over a couple of these. And if you want to jump in, I'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder off for the rest of the day. She'll be back tomorrow, and it's WGN. Steve, are you around for a little bit? Because I'd love to have you in on this.
Sure. This
is PolitiFact, one of the websites that we both recommended if you're looking for some fact-checking from last night's debate. Washington Post is very good at it. Politico is very good at it. PolitiFact is very good at it. In this particular election, Cartoon Network might be a good place to visit also. So what they do is they go through some of the things that there has been some debate at the debates about in terms of how much truth there is or not. So let's go through some of the major ones from last night, and then we'll tell you what was said and then how accurate those remarks were last night. They were talking about Donald Trump and his ability to build a business based on a loan that his father had given him. Trump said, my father gave me a very small loan in 1975, and I built it into a company that's worth many, many billions of dollars and some of the greatest assets in the world. So then Politico explains exactly how accurate or inaccurate that is. Since Trump has yet to release his tax returns, it's hard to gauge just how much money Donald Trump started with and how much he has now. The very small loan that Trump was referring to was $1 million from Trump's father, Fred, to finance his Grand Hyatt Hotel. This happened back in 1978. At that point, Donald Trump was already president of his father's real estate company. But Fred Trump made out many other loans to his son until his death in 1999. That would include a $70 million construction loan for the Grand Hyatt and a $3.5 million casino chip loan to bail out Trump's struggling gaming empire. This according to the Washington Post fact checker. I know anytime I've asked my dad for a loan upwards of that many million dollars, he usually says no. Sometimes he'll say yes, but then realizes we don't have that kind of money.
There was that one time you had him for a minute.
Right.
And then no.
And then lost him. So they, if you'll remember last night, they were going back and forth as to how exactly a large of a loan Donald Trump's father, Fred, had given him. So there's your answer. Hillary Clinton at one point said that Donald Trump's tax plan would deliver the biggest tax cuts to the top percent of the people in the country. Was that accurate or inaccurate? According to PolitiFact, this was accurate for Trump's old tax plan, that the top 0.1% who were making more than $3.6 million per year would receive 18% of the tax cuts under his proposal, while the bottom 60% would also enjoy a 16.4% of the cuts. So that was in reference to who was benefiting from these tax cuts. Was it the extremely wealthy, which it seemed to be based on these numbers, and how would it affect the middle class? So those cuts under his plan would help the very wealthy and people with virtually no money or very little money anyway. Donald Trump said again last night, I did not say that climate change, they were discussing climate change and where it comes from. I did not say that climate change was a hoax that was perpetrated by the Chinese. That was, if you were watching last night, that was one of the first heated moments. Up until that moment, I'm trying to remember if anything happened that really stirred him up prior to that. I think that was the one that was one of the turning point moments. He was very even keeled for the most part, almost polite, fairly courteous. Still sniffling, or not, depending on who you ask. But he seemed to have everything kind of at hand until that discussion of whether or not the Chinese were responsible for climate change. Trump did say in a tweet 4 years ago that the Chinese were responsible, though he has since described the tweet as a joke. He hasn't pushed the exact theory since. He has repeatedly called climate change a hoax in speeches, in tweets, and in media appearances. And he said this as recently of January 18th of this year, that action on climate change is done for the benefit of China. How would China benefit from climate change, Steve? Do we know?
Well, they could continue to pollute their brains out, and we would try to stop polluting, and we would inhibit our own business, you know, with green initiatives while they continued to pollute and made more money. I think that's
so the benefit
that's
comes
one theory,
from them
I don't
not
know.
Spending any money for greener alternatives.
And we would be slowing down by trying to become more green. I don't
All
know.
Right.
I mean, that seems like that could be it.
All right. Hillary Clinton at some point last night said, I voted for some trade deals, the biggest one, a multinational one known as CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A, I voted against. Was that true or not true? Hillary Clinton has zigzagged on trade over the years. Of the 10 trade deals that Clinton could have voted on, she voted in favor of 6 and against 2, CAFTA being one of them, and the Trade Act of 2002 being the other. And then other deals with Peru and Jordan she did not vote on, and she did not vouch for those deals. Very specific on those. Donald Trump said at one point, now look, we have the worst revival of any economy since the Great Depression. The accuracy of this claim depends on how exactly you're measuring it. If you're looking at the GDP growth, Donald Trump is correct. But if you're looking at the employment picture, then 2001's recovery was worse. If you'll remember, this came up yesterday because they were talking about essentially where we were 8 years ago as opposed to where we are now. And Donald Trump was complaining about the small growth. But as we've mentioned on the show several times, the economy has been basically pretty good. There are still people out of work. There's no question about that. But if you look at where we are now compared to 8 years ago, we're in much better shape financially. Most of us are. As a nation, I think we are. Hillary Clinton said that you have been taken to business bankruptcy 6 times. Is that accurate or inaccurate? According to PolitiFact, it is accurate. Donald Trump declared 4 times within 2 years in the 1990s bankruptcy, then once more in 2004, and then another time in 2009. But experts have told us that Trump shouldn't bear all the responsibility, as Clinton's wording suggests, as the majority of the bankruptcies happened as overall casino industry struggled. I've heard other people, and it doesn't go into detail in this particular report on PolitiFact, say that what Donald Trump has done many times, including the casino in Indiana that filed for bankruptcy, is he kind of lends his name. He sells his name to an entity, in this case, a casino. So whether or not you can call him responsible for the failing of a business that essentially he's just sold his name to might be unfair. And I got to be honest with you, I think it is unfair. If he's just selling his name to a business, their rise or fall doesn't really fall upon his responsibilities. It falls on the ownership, who just literally paid him to use his name. So I don't know if you can blame him for those in terms of bankruptcy, can you?
He is lending his name and using his name to, I don't know.
He had little, if anything, to do with the daily operations of a casino. And the same is true of Atlantic City, New Jersey. His name was on it, certainly, but he wasn't calling the shots there. He sold them his name.
Right.
So do you blame him for that?
I don't want to sell you my name. Would you?
I'll be more careful if your name's involved.
How much?
A lot more careful. All right, there's a couple more of these, and I'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. What are your thoughts? It has to do with the fact-checking of last night's debates. As you're watching this, did you take it all with a grain of salt the way I did, waiting to find these fact checks or not? We're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill F. on WGN. All right, the calls are pouring in, as are the texts, and I appreciate that, at 312-981-7200. Wendy has the rest of the day off. She'll be back tomorrow. Ed wants to comment on Donald Trump's involvement in those casinos I was just referring to. Ed, you say he was more involved than just his name, huh?
Oh, yeah, Bill, in Indiana. I mean, the Tribune had a nice article about it a few weeks ago. He went into Gary. He sold them, and Gary did. Because of his expertise in running casinos, they were going to be making money. Then he made promises to be hiring people from the city of Gary. At least 50% will be Gary residents. That's how he got it, because he said he was going to be personally running the thing himself, not just using his name. When it turned out he wasn't hiring people from Gary, but from other places, other promises he made. Well, Gary, they sued him, the investors sued him, and the court upheld Trump saying, well, these were promises, they weren't legally binding contracts. So he comes into these places promising he's going to be involved in them. That's why they're going to make money. Not just like, you know, Mike Dick is selling his name for a restaurant. He's just the manager of the bar. He's just selling his name. He's got nothing to do with it. Trump says he's going to run the thing, and he's very much involved in these matters. Just another real short story. This is not anecdotal, but it's a fact. When they're building Trump Tower, a friend of mine worked for a company. They put a bid in. Worked on it for a year. The guy who won a Celebrity Apprentice called him up and said, you got it, but Trump wants to talk to you. Trump himself got on the phone with the company's president and said, you got to knock your price down by 10%. The guy said, no, I can't do it. This is the best price I can do. He said, fine, you're not getting it. Trump went to the next guy on the list. That guy dropped his price by 10%. The guy got stiffed, declared bankruptcy, and now he's out of job. Trump never paid him. That's an actual fact. So these are things that Trump actually does in real life.
They alluded to that last night. There's the story of an architect who put together his golf club in New York and how a price was agreed upon, and Trump kind of changed the offer once the golf club was done and then ended up paying him only a fraction of the newly negotiated price. It's sad. I mean, I know that you can look at it and saying, well, that's the way a successful businessman can operate, but I don't look at it that way. I look at that as somebody who's agreed to something and then reneged on those agreements.
It seemed to happen with a high percentage of times, right? With the reporting I've seen.
There's like 3,000 lawsuits in Florida against them for the same practices. You know, if you can get away with that in business and look yourself in the mirror in the morning and say, well, I'm really cool, great. You can't be the president of the United States and treat people like that. You can't be making promises to government leaders around the world, we're going to do this and that, and I'd say, well, I was only kidding. It's a completely different situation, business, versus being the leader of the world's largest and most powerful country. So, thanks, guys.
Ed, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for the call. There's a text here. I want to read the specific wording on it, but they talk about how what we're talking about now is the very reason they didn't watch the debate last night. Here it is. Okay, this is why I didn't watch. Besides, I already know who I'm voting for. I think a lot of people who watched the debate already had it in their heads who they were voting for. This almost supersedes a decision. This almost becomes, to me, this has become such a cultural event that even if you're 100% sold on voting for Donald Trump or voting for Hillary Clinton, I don't know how you sit this one out. This sets a precedent for future elections. I really think, and if I'm wrong on this, I apologize for being wrong, but I really think in the future what this election is doing is opening the doors for other people. And maybe this is a good thing. Actually, not maybe. This is a good thing. If Donald Trump is right about one thing, it's the fact that we've bowed down to politicians too long, that somebody should be given a chance that doesn't have the background of politics. I agree with that 100%. I don't think he's the guy, but I think this is going to open up a door for many other people who have had aspirations of running maybe as far as the country, maybe the United States, who have said, boy, I don't have a life in politics, but I would love to give it a shot. Maybe somebody will come along in 4 or 8 or 12 years that's better suited to that. I wish it were him. It doesn't, for me, I know there's a lot of you who think he is the guy who can do that. I don't see it, but maybe this will open up somebody else's mind to the possibility of running that maybe never would have run again. So even if you have it 100% in your head who you're already going to vote for, it's almost too important to not watch these debates and not get involved in this election. It's just there's too much going on to not be involved in it. Let me talk to Dorothy real quick. Hey, Dorothy, how are you? Dorothy?
Yes, I'm
there
here.
You are. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. You watched last night. What'd you think? What'd you make of all of it?
Well, I didn't get a chance to watch last night, but I did hear a lot about it. And like the others, I know who I'm voting for, but I think that Donald Trump is just as responsible for letting someone use his name as we are when we let somebody use our name. You're responsible for that bill if you sign off on it. He signed off. He should be responsible. He shouldn't be getting away with stuff. His taxes and all that. You tax me, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't get away with it.
Right.
Why should he?
That is kind of curious.
If I don't pay my taxes, you're after me. You look into man. You chase me down. You charge me.
Right.
You take my money. Take his.
Dorothy, earlier in the show, I don't know if you got to hear it, but we were talking about how there was a moment last night where when called about not reporting his federal income taxes, he alluded to the fact that that's good business. I'm a good businessman. I found legal ways to not pay federal income tax. And Steve, you were kind of not so much siding with him, but saying, yeah, that you, there's ways to do that. He
right.
found the ways to do that.
I would do it if I could legally pay no.
No.
Well,
no.
I would.
I'm not siding with him. There's no legal way to get around it. The fact is Donald Trump owed taxes. He should be made to pay it like I am. Like I said, you come after me, go after him. There's no legal nothing. Taxes are taxes.
Well, thank you, Dorothy. I appreciate it. The reality of that is, Steve, as we pointed out earlier, is that if you do creative bookkeeping, you can find loopholes and you can find ways to do it. But then I said earlier, and I stand by this, what if everybody found those loopholes?
Right. Well, that's the problem. We need to close a lot of those. I mean, they're loopholes or laws or regulations, but it doesn't even require, quote unquote, creative bookkeeping. There are things, you know, that are written into our tax laws that benefit, you know, traders and real estate and things like that. There just are.
Right.
It's politically embarrassing. I mean, it's good business for him to figure out a way to pay no income taxes, but it's lousy politics.
Yeah.
And that's why he's hiding behind this audit excuse for not releasing his his taxes.
If you're him, though, and you're in that situation last night where that becomes an issue, he seemed to brag about it.
He did. I know.
Right? So
that made no sense to me. That was a mistake.
I don't understand the bragging about it.
Because he was interrupting you. He could have just kept his mouth shut.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's good business.
Yeah.
Or
I also like
that. No, he said, I'm smart. He said, I'm smart.
Right, right. Those were his words. Yeah, yeah. All right, we need to take a break. There will be more discussion of last night's debate, and we're anxious to hear from you either by text or by phone. Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune is going to join us in just a little bit, and we'll cover some of the highlights and lowlights of last night's debate. So stay where you are. More ahead. Bill Leff with you on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder is taking the rest of the day off. She'll be back tomorrow. Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune joins me live in studio. First of all, hi. Thank you for being here. Not much to discuss politically, but I appreciate you coming
There's nothing going on.
Not a
thing.
I do want to read a text. A texter at 630 says, hey, guys, regarding Trump. That's not the better one. This is the better one, 630. How can Trump be so proud of these tax loopholes but still be critical of corporations that go overseas and do the same thing? I know you're coming in midway through this discussion, but we were talking about Donald Trump's failure to disclose his federal tax returns and saying how, almost boasting about how legally, even though he's not paying federal income taxes, he's doing the right thing because it's good business. Was that the best way to handle that yesterday? I'm not sure it was it?
Wait till I'm done laughing. No, it was a terrible moment during the debate when she was talking about why he hasn't released his tax returns. And she really nailed him with, I think, four reasons. One, you're not as rich as you make yourself out to be.
Yeah.
Two, you owe tons of money to various countries and corporations. C, you haven't paid any federal income tax. And then she gave an example when he had to reveal his tax returns at one point because he was trying to get a casino license.
Mm-hmm.
Or four, you're not as charitable as mm-hmm. you say that you are. I mean, she really brought home the whole point of why it is important for him to release his taxes and for him to kind of brush it off and flick at the fact that, if I didn't, that would be smart if I didn't pay any taxes. I mean, that is an issue that I think cuts across all party lines. If you are a conservative Republican, you believe in the morality of paying your fair share. And for him to kind of admit that perhaps he has not, I thought was a really low moment for him.
Yeah, I thought so too. Overall, was last night's performance from both candidates and from the moderator, Lester Holt, kind of what you expected, Kristen? Or was there anything that really jolted you last night?
Oh, I was really jolted at how badly Trump did.
Yeah.
I mean, from the moment they took off, it felt like she grabbed him by the ankles and tipped him over and just mopped the floor with his hair.
Yeah.
he stumbled around. He had no... I mean, there is ammunition to go after her.
Sure.
The Clinton Foundation... lies after Benghazi. You know, wherever you fall on the political spectrum, there is area for him to try to get some gains. When she's talking about Wall Street
and how he has like trickle down economics and he wants to help all the wealthy folks. She is a wealthy person, mm-hmm. and she has helped out Wall Street, and she's taken tons of money for speaking engagements. From Wall. I mean, all of these things that he could have brought up, he didn't. So I found it very surprising how much he really was stumbling, taking lots of sips of water.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed nervous to me and just proved the point that without a teleprompter and with no debate prep, he was just an empty shell, I thought.
A lot of people have talked about his sniffling. He pins it on the fact that his microphone there in studio at Hofstra University, his microphone was not cutting through the way Hillary Clinton's was. So even though it was perceived as him sniffling throughout the debate, that wasn't the case. But you heard it, right? It was pretty audible throughout.
You know what? I did not notice it,
no?
I have to say. I was watching at a debate party where we had a big screen, and so maybe that was muffling the sound.
Thank you, Kristen. I didn't hear it
either. Steve didn't either.
I did not notice that, no. I'm
sitting all with all my friends all by myself in my family room.
It was, for me, because, I mean, he does have, you have to admit, he has a certain amount of tics and body moves that are his go-to signature moves, and I wasn't accustomed to that one, but almost on every answer, as he would pause, you heard, and then he would continue, and at first I just, actually still now, I just go, well, he may just have a cold. There's nothing to it more than that, but he was pretty widely criticized for it.
Well, maybe if he prepared.
Maybe that was part of it.
It would have helped, and I think Hillary Clinton, when she was having her coughing fits, she made the mistake of keeping the mic. She was coughing into the microphone
yeah.
at that one event where it was
yeah,
just,
I remember,
went on
sure.
for minutes and minutes. So maybe she learned her lesson if she needed to cough or sniffle. But no, I didn't notice it, and I was kind of surprised when I heard news about it.
Let's talk about something you just said about his lack of preparation. How can you go into something this important without not just preparing, but over preparing? The more knowledge, the better in a debate like this. Why would he decide that that wasn't in his best interest? He has spent the last several days touring and meeting with potential voters, which is fine. But wouldn't you kind of hunker down in a situation like this and go out of your way and cram for this this midterm final?
I think it plays into his whole persona that, A, he likes to speak off the cuff. And
yeah.
that's what has gotten him this far, is not having robotic answers. We saw this with President Obama when he had, I think it was the first debate against Mitt Romney. And he was roundly criticized because his aides kept saying, all right, President Obama, let's brush up on your debate skills. And he said no. And he got his rear end handed to him. So there is value in doing that. Maybe we'll see a different Donald Trump at the next debate, because I thought he seemed nervous, and it has surprised me that even some of Trump's supporters believe he somehow won that debate. He
right.
clearly did not.
But Kristen, I think that's a very good lesson. You know, Romney crushed Obama 4 years ago in debate one, and Obama was able to recover. So just because Hillary Clinton might have, as you say, mopped the floor with Trump's hair in debate one, that doesn't mean it's over. He can certainly recover in debate two.
He can. I was just surprised at all the different areas, even when she brought up, you know, that he was given money from his father to start a real estate business. He didn't defend the fact that his dad was an entrepreneur. And, you know, that's what the free markets are all about. And Hillary Clinton has been able to enjoy the free market system as well by getting all these outrageous speaking fees. That's what her price is. That's the demand for her. That's what a free market economy allows. And he just did not. He was very defensive, and he kept falling back on his old lines and, you know, criticizing her for not traveling around.
Right.
The stamina issue.
Yeah.
And then this morning he's elaborating on how he was proud of himself for not bringing up Bill Clinton's infidelities.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. There are legitimate issues if you want to go after Hillary Clinton. He started to go down the road when he talked about the fact that she's an insider and she's been around for 30 years. That has some traction. And he could have made a better point of, you know, bringing that up. But he would start on that road and then he would fizzle off and end in some with an insult.
And, you know, the other thing that cost him last night was the whole Alicia Machado thing.
Yeah.
And he went on, if I can just play you 10 seconds here, he went on Fox and Friends this morning.
Made it worse.
And instead of cleaning it up, he made it worse.
She was the winner and, you know, she gained a massive amount of weight. And it was a real problem. We had a real problem. Not only that, her attitude. And we had a real problem with her.
All right, so if you're a guy who's trying to tell the women of America, hey, despite what you may have heard about me, I'm a champion to you. Believe me, I'm going to look out for you. Is this the best road to take, criticizing a beauty pageant winner who gained some weight? I don't know if it is it?
You're throwing me all these softball questions.
I would try my best to not do what you just did.
No, but I mean, back to the first Republican debate with Megyn Kelly, when Megyn Kelly pointed out all the awful things that he said about women. Nothing about Trump surprises me along that, you know, along that subject matter. And actually, I'm still going to vote for someone based on their economic policy, their qualifications. What are they going to do about our $19 trillion in debt? I just tend to try to ignore all of the fringe stuff on both sides when they make remarks like that.
For a long time, he wouldn't let go on the idea that Barack Obama was born in another country. Now, he seems to have a similar thing with Hillary Clinton in referring to her as the architect of ISIS. Is America buying that Hillary Clinton is the reason that ISIS exists?
I don't think so. Again, he could have added some texture to that.
Yeah.
The fact that we have gone in and, you know, destroyed entire nations like Iraq did lead to the surgence of some of these radicalized groups.
Yeah.
So there is a tenuous connection between not necessarily Hillary Clinton, but our foreign policy and the rise of these groups. But, you know, trying to drill down and blame that on her specifically. And then I think he criticized her at one point for putting her plan to battle ISIS on her website.
Yeah.
It just felt like it was, you know, Hillary Clinton debating a fifth grader.
Yeah.
Like the whole debate felt that way.
His point there is, what would stop ISIS from going to your website, Hillary Clinton's website, and figuring out what your plan is? He was very upset that she would post her plan on her website. I don't know. Is that the best move if he's trying to combat his abilities versus hers?
No,
there were several of those last night that I went
out. He's trying to protect his, you know, he won't reveal what his ISIS plan is, probably because he doesn't actually have one.
But he said he would take care of them within the year.
It would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
It would be unbelievable. By the way,
as the audit's done.
Right. If the audit is done.
If you were drinking last night, if you were playing a bingo drinking game on Unbelievable, you did not show up at work today.
Crazy drunk. I know.
You had a really bad hangover today.
Kristen McQuarrie is here. We're talking about last night's debate. If you want to jump in, please do. We're at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. Back after this, it's Bill Leff on WGN. We're talking about last night's debate. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you have any questions or comments, we've discussed at great lengths the mistakes that Donald Trump made last night. What were the mistakes that Hillary Clinton made last night, Kristen? Harder to find.
She really didn't make
harder
too
to
many.
Find.
I mean, I don't believe in her policies. So when she opened up the debate talking about how, you know, we need to have a national raising of the national minimum wage, equal pay for women's work, that those are all just kind of dog whistle issues to me. Wanting companies to do more profit sharing, wanting companies to do more to help people balance work and family. I mean, to me, that's federal government overreaching into the lives of business owners. And so, like, policy wise, I'm not really with her. And when he tried to go after her toward the end of the debate on an issue, she sort of took the bait of, you're doing this because I'm a woman. And I don't particularly like that either. But otherwise, I mean, the split screen so that you could watch both of them the whole time, she was very composed. She seemed relaxed. To me, all the criticism of her leading up to this moment, criticism from myself included, that she is very robotic and that she doesn't go off script, I think she showed last night she is actually a really good politician and a much better candidate. She was quick on her feet. She just let him sort of self-destruct at various points. She dropped a couple zingers saying, you know, well, I know you don't really work in reality, Donald. And then at one point she said, well, I guess you're going to blame. I think by the end of the night, I'm going to be blamed for everything. She just was really on her A game last night. And I watched a little bit of her today. She's at a rally, I believe, in North Carolina. And you can tell she's just reinvigorated. She knows she did well. She's very a little bit less stiff than she normally is.
All right, so this is a tough one, but much like halftime at a football game, Trump's coaches will get with him and say, you got to do more of this, you got to do less of this. If you're one of Hillary Clinton's coaches, what are you telling her to do more of or less of for number two and number three?
I mean, I think issue-wise, they're going to veer off more into foreign policy, and so she's going to need, you know, she needs to talk more, less about the fact that she flew around and met with all these diplomats, but what is actually her going-forward plan in Syria, in Iraq, with Russia. I do think she's going to need to brush up on some of that, because I do get the sense that even as Secretary of State, that was all handled by other people.
Right,
and,
right.
But other than that, you know, I think more humor, even more than she offered last night, and just, you know, letting him sort of unwind himself. I think she's going to do fine.
Yeah,
and he will only improve if the polls show that he worsened after the debate. And I don't know that I've seen that yet. I think the first couple of polls there he was down maybe by a point, but he's very responsive to polls. Not even his own staff. People around him, if the polls show that he did not do well and he's slipping, then I think he'll get serious.
I wonder if his base, the people that have been there with him from day one and remain with him, if they want him to be more aggressive and kind of, I know this sounds crazy because we're talking about a guy who could be the president, but less cultured, less guarded. The people who like that in him, his renegade ways, will they want more of that from him? Or, you know, people keep saying he's got it. This is the time he's got to look more presidential. But I wonder if his true fan base really wants that, or if they want a more unbridled Donald Trump.
I don't know that you get more unbridled than we did last night.
Yeah.
And I think even if you are a diehard Donald Trump supporter, you recognized that he didn't go after her on the
sure.
Clinton Foundation. He didn't make a lot of points. You have 100 million viewers watching you. You need to go after her on issues that people get.
Yeah.
They get that you had a private email server. They understand that that was risking national security. They get that the FBI was investigating you and that five of your aides were granted immunity. All of these issues he didn't even talk about.
Right.
And the Clinton Foundation. I mean, do we really think that that Saudi Arabia was giving $50 million to the Clinton Foundation because they are just so dedicated to making sure that people who have HIV are getting proper medication?
Mm.
No. There was a lot of access buying going on. Again, he didn't even go after her on that stuff. So I think if you're a diehard Trump supporter, you want him to be more targeted and fierce in the areas where she's weak, and he didn't do that.
Let's take a couple of calls. Tom is on the line. Tom, hi, it's me, and of course, Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune talking about last night's debate. What did you want to say?
Oh, well, first I want to correct the false narrative that's going out there in the mainstream media that Donald Trump did not prepare for the debates. Just because Donald Trump does not prepare for the debates the way Hillary Clinton prepares for the debates does not mean he did not prepare for the debates. Just because he did not have mock debate sessions does not mean he did not prepare for the debates. I saw numerous interviews where he was talking with his economic advisors, and foreign policies advisors and having sessions with them. So he did prepare, and quite frankly, he won the first 25 minutes of the debate easily. I just want to correct someone. She just said that he didn't mention the immunity. He said the fifth. They pleaded the fifth. He said it in the debate. So I just want to correct her saying that he didn't bring up the emails and the pleading the fifth.
Tom, you said he was prepared. Did you feel he was well prepared?
Yes.
You did? Yeah.
Yeah, I think the media is trying to say because he did Donald Trump is not doing mock sessions. Donald Trump is not. That doesn't mean he's not preparing. Everybody, I prepare for a golf tournament, a poker session in my mind differently than someone else. Everybody prepares differently. So don't say he didn't prepare just because he didn't prepare the way your definition of preparing is.
But don't you think based upon what you saw last night, his advisors will insist on him doing mock debates
No. Everybody knows. I'm a Trump supporter. Everybody knows he missed a few shots that he could have went at, especially with the emails. He could say, "Okay, I don't release my taxes. Maybe I didn't release my taxes because you got this to hide, this to hide. This. Well, maybe you're not releasing your emails because you got this to hide, this to hide." But the bottom line is, one thing I want him to bring up is I want him to ask the American people: did she commit obstruction of justice when, after a subpoena was issued, destroyed her emails? That's evidence that was subpoenaed, and she just. So are we going to have to go through a president facing if she went to presidency facing obstruction of justice charges? Was that obstruction of justice? Let's have the fact checkers check that out.
Right.
I don't know. Was it? Well, if you destroy evidence after a subpoena was issued, is that obstruction of justice? I don't know.
FBI. I mean, she admitted that when she was deposed, and she was not charged.
So Is that so? So that's not obstruction of justice. If you destroy evidence after a subpoena was issued for that evidence, that's not obstruction of justice.
I mean, you and I can say that, but law enforcement didn't. And I'm not defending her. I'm agreeing with you that those are issues that Trump should have driven the point home.
A better prepared Donald Trump would have. Don't you think, Tom?
No, because that's his first interview. That's his first session one-on-one. There could have been a little nervousness, even though he's a big shot, braggadocio. There's a little bit of nervousness going in on a one-on-one interview. So just because he didn't perform doesn't mean he didn't prepare. Sometimes so much sometimes Sugar Ray Leonard, whatever, they practice, they go on a fight, and then they just know that they don't perform. They don't exercise their strategy because that's not preparation. That's just performance sometimes.
All right, Tom, I have to take a break. Thanks for the call. Have a great day.
All sides of the issue. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Well, Tom was there to represent one of the sides of the issue.
I'm pretty conservative leaning myself, but
I know.
And some people are just, if you are a diehard, you're just never going to admit that maybe your candidate didn't do as well as you would have liked.
Let's do this. Can you stay for a couple minutes more? Let's do the news and then more with Krista McQuarrie. If you're on hold and you can stay there, we'd love to hear from you. We'll get to more of your calls and texts in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff with the NWGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy has the rest of today off. She'll be back tomorrow. Krista McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune is here, and we're going through the high points and low points of last night's political debate, presidential debate. Let's get some callers, and I keep promising we will. This would be a good time to do it. Cecile, we're going to start out with you. Go ahead. You're on WGN. Cecile? No? All right. Her question was, wouldn't it be better if they turned off the other person's microphone when one is speaking, kill the other person's microphone? Was that a big factor last night? I don't know if that was a huge factor.
I've heard that in a number of debates, especially when you had six or seven candidates on the stage at the same time during the Republican primary, that you needed to have some other way to control them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That just goes against my feeling of just like that's rude. And there has to be a better way to get them to finish a point than cutting off their mic.
They both interrupted on several occasions.
Sure.
Sometimes it was almost comical the way Donald Trump would just, he would lean in and go, wrong. And that was, to me, that was very funny.
Not true.
Right.
Not true.
He did that several times. So what do you do with that? Lester Holt did his best to police that, but at some point it becomes impossible. I don't know what you do.
I don't know what you do either. When we have debates like this at the Tribune editorial board, you do kind of just let them know up front, we will be interrupting you. I mean, you have to keep in mind, they are coming to this debate with the intent to filibuster.
Right.
They're not there to, you know, say anything other than what is on their agenda. So you do have to be a little bit aggressive with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know that turning off the mic is the right thing to do. And I sort of liked that Lester Holt. I thought his questions were way too softball. But I did like that he just let them talk. And so you almost got a sense of how they would be as president just during that debate, rather than getting into the weeds about when did Hillary Clinton see this email and when did her aides, you know, destroy her BlackBerry. I think it was helpful. It was useful to me as a voter to see that.
Kristen, what about this? People are talking about the fact that they used a pretty solid two shot, which means you saw Mr. Trump's head on one side and Mrs. Clinton's head on the other side, so that even when one was making their point, you were getting the reactions of the others. And several people have said that Donald Trump didn't seem to be aware of that, that sometimes he'd be making funny faces. Again, is that as presidential as he could possibly be under those circumstances? You tell me. I don't know.
I mean, you'll recall that Al Gore got into a lot of trouble. And basically, people say he lost the race because he, during the split screen, was always pouting and sighing and rolling his eyes. I mean, that was part of what the debate was going to be about. We knew that as viewers, it was going to be split screen. So I'd be surprised if Donald Trump didn't know. And I think that really acquitted Hillary well, because she was very expressionless at times. Sometimes, though, you got like a genuine smile out of her. He just has that RBF, which I also suffer from sometimes. You know what that is?
How much of it can you say?
I don't know.
You have to be careful.
Resting bee face,
basically.
That just means when you're listening and concentrating, you look angry. And I have that disease as well. And so does Donald Trump. So he just looks, he actually wears a frown.
If you look at the curvature of his lips, of his mouth, It starts low end, it arcs up, and then finishes down on the other side. And it always seems like he's perturbed. He's always just to look at him, it's like this man is not very happy. And maybe the presidential role is one that isn't always going to be very happy, but he just doesn't seem to ever want to be wherever he is.
Right. And so the fact that it was split screen, you really just saw his grumpy face the whole time. I mean, that's how he's been in all the debates.
Yeah, yeah. I mentioned this earlier before you got here. Tell me what you make of this. Anytime a city is mentioned, Mr. Trump explains that he cares because he has property there. Chicago, a very violent city, that's disturbing to me because I have a hotel there. You mentioned another city, all the violence in that city, that's upsetting because I've got a building there. It's very upsetting. For most of us, we have no way to relate to that. We don't have buildings in cities all over the country. Shouldn't somebody explain to him, you're creating kind of a disconnect, you're making yourself, I know he's a very wealthy man, and we get that, but to the rest of us who don't have buildings in every city where something could potentially go wrong, we're not buying into that, are we?
No, and I noticed that too, that, you know, they talked about Charlotte and everything that happened in Charlotte, and he kept dropping the fact that he, you know, owned property there or had real estate there, had done some business dealings there. Maybe he thinks that people find that to be impressive. I mean, there is a crowd that believes that, you know, someone who knows how to create wealth and build wealth should be the next president. But again, you're standing next to someone, Hillary Clinton, who has made $104 million on speaking engagements since she and her husband left the White House. She's rich, too, but she doesn't do that. She doesn't, you know, name drop or talk about whatever outside businesses they have. I don't even think connect the fact that she is a multi-millionaire, but they do with him because he's talking about it all the time.
She mentioned her book yesterday, which I know people have said the debates shouldn't be used as a way of plugging your book. And I kind of get that. But whatever the question was kind of set that up. You know, he asked about her policies and she said, well, I don't just have them. I've written a book about it. You can read it. And she said what the name of the book is. So I guess he almost inadvertently set her up for that. He's mentioned his book many, many times, too.
Do you know the name? Quick quiz.
The Art of the Deal.
Yes. And what was hers?
Hop on pop.
Stronger together. And it was a great moment for her because he was criticizing her for not having an economic policy. And she said, actually, I do. It's called Stronger Together. It's a book. You can get it at the airport tomorrow.
Right.
I thought she was funny in that moment.
Why does he keep criticizing several times, not just last night? It came up once last night, but I've heard him on two other occasions talk about how we need to rebuild America, and airports are always mentioned. He talked about how if you travel around the world, you get to see great airports in other parts of the world, but then when you come to America, the airports are not good. Why is he so hung up on us improving our airports? They seem to be working.
Probably because he doesn't have to use them.
Is that what it is?
He has a private jet. I'm sure he has his own runway, his own tarmac. He doesn't have to deal with hoi polloi of an airport. But I think he thinks somehow that airports signify success of a country or something.
I guess.
I don't know, but I have a hard time believing he's one of those people standing in line at McDonald's in the United Wing.
No, KFC. He's made a point out of mentioning that he loves to have Kentucky Fried Chicken on his airplane. So it's KFC. If he's in any lines, it's a KFC. Let's go to Brian. Brian, hi. It's me, Bill. And of course, Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. What did you want to say? Brian? I don't know why we're not getting this. Hold on a second. Brian, is that you? No.
We're scaring people off
today. I think
we
are scaring people off today. In future debates, now the next one's coming up in a little over a week. This is the vice presidential debate. What will those candidates learn from what happened last night? What will we see from them when they square off?
The vice presidential debate, I think we'll see that we wish they were both running for president. I really like the VP candidates across the board.
Is that true? Do you think that's true?
I do think it's true. I even like the Gary Weld, the Libertarian vice presidential candidate more than I like the presidential candidate. So I think you're going to see two really smart, polished politicians.
Tim Kaine and Mike Pence.
Yes, who both have a record to speak of. I mean, Mike Pence can talk about Indiana and how they've had a balanced budget for 10 years, and they have a 30-day bill cycle. Ours, you know, we have to wait about 6 months to get paid by the state if the state owes you money. So I just think it will be cordial, refreshing to have two people just spend an hour talking about policy. That's what I'm expecting.
Don't you love Mike Pence on several occasions? I've seen him do this nearly a half a dozen times. When drilled on something that Donald Trump has said or done, he chuckles and explains how he and Mr. Trump are very different people. I just think that's the most diplomatic way of saying that's Donald being Donald. I'm a different guy. You know, I know my role. I understand his role. I just think that's the most diplomatic way of handling it. You can't agree or disagree.
But he still has to defend him. I mean, this is he's on. That's the deal you sign up for when you agree to be the running mate. But to see him, it does pain me a little bit to see him on all these talk shows talking about what a great job Donald Trump did during the debate last night. Even Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, was praising, you know, how well Donald. I mean, really, that is just not true.
Yeah.
It just can't possibly be true.
As a side note, we discussed this on the show the other day. You weren't here. Ted Cruz has given his endorsement to Donald Trump. What do you make of that? I mean, that's strictly playing the party's game, isn't it? You have to do that for the party, for your own future, I guess.
You know, I was at the convention when Ted Cruz refused to endorse and yet took up convention time, got a key speaking slot. And I actually just thought it was rude. Like my rude-o-meter went off. And so, I mean, I don't think you take up time during the convention and slam the nominee. Just don't speak or don't go. That's what a lot of other people did. So then the fact that he turned around and did endorse him, I just think he's scrambling. I think he really hurt his brand by either way, either going to the convention and not endorsing or now endorsing. You know, the people who thought he was really brave to do that, now he turned around and endorsed. So I'm just at a point with Ted Cruz of who cares. Now I kind of get why he has no friends in the Senate.
That's why in that situation, when given your options, you say to yourself, it's best to remain in the shadows, stay back, let this thing play out, distance myself and see where we are in 4 years. Both the convention and the endorsement are both confusing to me. I don't understand why he would do either.
I don't know. He prayed. He prayed a lot about it. That's what he said. And so he finally decided to endorse. And at this point, in my opinion, he lost so much credibility. It just everything is about Ted Cruz. And if you didn't know that before, you know it now.
Yeah.
And so he had to do this for political reasons, not because in his heart he really finally believes that Donald Trump is, you know, the better candidate.
Right, right. Kristen, thanks for doing this. I appreciate
it.
The rest of the way should be just as entertaining, shouldn't it? I can't imagine it not being.
More drinking games.
That's the only way to handle it. It's Kristen McQuarrie. Read her in the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then tell you about a milestone on television that'll take place later on today. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff on WGN. All right, it's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Tonight, a landmark, a first in TV history. Jason Nathanson of ABC joins us right now to talk about that. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, and it's tomorrow night, but we just got the news on this.
Oh, tomorrow, okay.
This is coming out now. Yeah, Modern Family is going to have the first ever transgender child actor in TV history play a character on the show. We're just finding out about this. One of the directors tweeted a picture of her. This is with 8-year-old Jackson Malarker.
Mm-hmm.
He's an 8-year-old boy from Atlanta, and he's transgender, and he will play a role on the show.
Is the role that Jackson playing also transgender?
Yes. So what's going to happen is, for people who are familiar with the show, there is a gay couple on the show, played by Eric Stonestreet and Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Cam and Mitchell are their names.
Mm-hmm.
They have an adopted Vietnamese daughter named Lily. Lily is going to have her transgendered friend Tom over for a play date. And both the parents are really happy because, you know, their daughter is progressive and, you know, that they're raising an open-minded child. But then being Modern Family and it being a comedy, you know, some signals get crossed and they use it as a teachable moment. But, yeah, he'll be playing a transgender child on the show.
It's one of those situations. And honestly, Modern Family has been at the forefront of this. Don't you think it creates sort of an acceptance when your favorite television show has a character like this? There was a time where it was very hard to find even a gay character on television, and those days are gone. So this is the next step, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, when Modern Family came on the air like 6 or 7 years ago, and Cam and Mitchell there were gay characters on TV before, but never such a normalized gay couple as them who had adopted a child. That was new for a lot of people, and the show became a hit. And, you know, this title, Modern Family, it's what we talk about a lot when we talk about families these days that are, you know, different than the norm, than what they used to be. Doing something like this now just kind of furthers that. And also, we've seen transgender actors on plenty of shows before now. You know, Orange is the New Black. And we have, you know, Transparent, where Jeffrey Tambor plays a man who transitions to a woman later in life. We've seen transgender actors on Nashville. But to have a child This area has kind of been broached a little bit before. There was a reality show called, I think, I Am Jazz, that was about a transgender child. But to have an actor on, you know, a top-rated comedy really does kind of normalize things.
Are they getting any kind of negative criticism from any groups because of this? Because this is land-breaking. Is anybody speaking out against this that you know of?
I haven't seen anything yet about people speaking out. You know, again, this is Modern Family, so this isn't going to change anybody's minds. Anybody who's already watching the show is, I mean, they're okay with this. But there are groups out there who will protest even if they haven't seen it. I have not seen anything like that yet. The story just broke, and we're going to see it tomorrow for the first time. So there's still time for protests, but not yet.
I'm guessing, Jason, I'm a couple years older than you, but I still remember as a kid, the very first time there was a regular gay character on a television show, I think it was Soap. I think it was Billy Crystal playing the role of Jody on Soap. And I remember so many people saying, well, we've got to boycott this. We can't let this sort of thing happen. Who knows what will happen if you put a gay character on television? So it's good to see that we've made some progress over the years, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, the progress keeps coming, but it's slow. But TV is the one, the more democratic of the bunch, where everybody kind of watches it and everybody's into it. And everybody watches shows like Modern Family on a regular network. This isn't on Amazon or Netflix or something
right, like
that, where not everybody watches. So, you know, I think there's still, you know, there's still room for pushing the boundaries even more. But this is definitely pushing the boundaries on mainstream television.
Well, we hope the obvious, that it creates a nice acceptance from America. So that's Modern Family, and it's on tomorrow night when you'll be able to see the first transgender child actor on a national television show. Jason, thanks very much. Appreciate the report.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have in store for you next. Stay where you are. It's Bill Left with you on WGN. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Ro and Anna in studio right now. Hi, guys. How are you?
Couldn't
Hi,
be Dad. Better. And I know I went over to Wendy's house and I gave her an IV.
Nice of you.
A Trump IV.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
You have special ones for that?
I was able to buy it without having to pay taxes on it, which I thought was good. Hello. Good, I did that. Oh, good.
We do. Good one.
Available in only orange, I understand. Mm-hmm. They don't come in any other colors for some weird reason.
He didn't look as orange last night, I didn't think.
No, it did. No, he did not mm-hmm. look as orange last night, but he had the sniffle.
I've decided that is a sign of concentration, that when he's concentrated, like when he has to read the prompter,
yeah,
he does that a lot. There's a sense of pride or something when he executes a sentence properly,
right?
Right. There right. When he doesn't just totally mess it up and yeah.
See?
Yeah.
See how I did it?
Nailed that.
Nailed it. Yep. Exactly. It's like talking to Kevin Powell.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Not so bad. Covered the Cubs.
Yep. Finished a sentence. Yep.
Got an interview.
That is what it is. Like, although last night, what was it? The not so liking cops, or what was it? Not so liking. You know, he's got.
He used some verbiage
about
that
a judge.
100% accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. He does. He does get a little lost in his own thoughts.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was fine. I mean, I got to tell you, he did not hurt himself. She did not hurt herself. She did not help herself that much. He helped her only slightly.
That's what I keep wondering. I thought this for 90 minutes mm-hmm. last night. Is anyone on the fence? Did something happen last night that made them go, okay, that's it. I'm voting for her. That's it. I'm voting for him. I didn't see any of those moments. Did you?
Well, they're trying to punctuate those now.
Yeah.
Right? Like the thing about the taxes. But I don't think that works as well as you think that works, because small business people, and they're like, of course he's not going to pay. You know, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to pay more taxes if it's legal, as long as he's not against? Although he is under audit. What he did is totally legal. Well, then why are you under audit for 15 years?
I suppose we don't know yet, right?
But even those moments where Lester Holt said, but during an audit, you're still allowed to show what your taxes are. And that's when he went to the Hillary Clinton thing of, right. Well, as soon as she shows the emails, I'll show the.
It was good. And I thought Lester Holt, that was this shining moment last night when he said, well, then it's negotiable.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
But he didn't follow up on that. He could stop and go, wait, just explain. You will release him under certain circumstances.
It seemed like Lester Holt did disappear for about 20 minutes of that debate.
He did.
We were all worried about him.
The craft services were, I'm told, were excellent back there.
What? I mean, yeah. You know,
is there a hot coffee back here? Is there a hot coffee? I'm going to go back and get the hot coffee.
What if he came back with a big neosinephrine for Trump and just slid it over to him? Here, I know you're sniffling.
Would have made more sense,
this.
Actually.
You'll feel better.
Blow your nose. Like, or there's a thing like you do with your kid, you know, where you like you just put the thing. So, all right, blow.
Yeah.
Blow.
He would hold it up to Trump's nose. That would have been great. Will you be discussing last night's...
No, not at all. It will not come up on tonight's program. Yeah. It's going to be really awkward, too, because Michael Steele's going to be here.
No, don't discuss it with Michael Steele.
Doug Schoen, remember him? You used to see him all over the TV. And he still is Fox News. Then we debut Tuesdays with Murray.
Oh, what is Tuesdays with Murray?
Troy Murray will join us on Tuesdays to talk about the Blackhawks season.
Perfect name.
Yeah. And then... We have Alex Stone is with Trump.
Oh.
That's great.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him while he's with Trump at 5:30.
Will
so
Alex Stone have the sniffle?
Nailed it.
Have a good show, guys.
Thank you,
Bill. Thank you, Bill.